Blog Talk Radio.
I was saying it without the mic on. This is the last word. It is October 25th, 2013. I'm Michael Lawson here with Thomas Fortenberry, and I am back. I am back doing the same thing I did before. Forgot to turn on the mic, which I did not do last Friday.
You met the limitation.
I forgot
of internet
the password. And I didn't have it with me. And I couldn't put the show on the air.
That's what happens when you're overseas, Mike.
Besides that, I had a few margaritas.
A few?
Well, let's not go overboard now.
That's because you were down there with all the really good stuff.
Hey, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico did not want to come home. I want to tell you. Hey. I got a bottle. I just showed you. I can't even read it because it's in Spanish. But he says it's $150.
Ouch.
I bought 5 bottles, so he gave it to me for $100.
Man.
It was, let's see, so that was a lot. It was like, because I was figuring 10 to 1, but it was really like some places 12 to 13. He gave it to me for 12 to 1. So, it was like 12,000 pesos.
Hmm. Prices like that just...
But he said that this bottle is supposed to last you a minimum of 10 years.
Unless?
No, he said there is no unless. He said you're not supposed to.
You accidentally pour it out.
No. Well, hey, but I did lose about a good quarter of an inch because I did not know.
That's not a quarter of an inch. That's like $25. Poured right on up.
Yeah, that's true. It has a cork top.
Yes.
And it's supposed to be standing up. He never told me that. And it's got plastic all the way up the nozzle, but it's got a cork top. And, hey, how the hell am I supposed to know? Since when you open up tequila with one of those screw things, wine opener. He says, you're only supposed to use this to sip You're not supposed to mix it. You have a shot glass. That's how you drink it. I had four shots of it in the store. I'm telling you. It's as smooth as water.
Yeah.
I am telling you that. Smooth as water.
That's why I always run with the buffaloes myself.
Oh, well, no, that's true. Well, anyway, the thing was that I got this little bottle. The bottle here is yours. He says the tequila I brought back you cannot buy in the store here. They don't sell it.
Right.
He says they use Patron for making margaritas. They mix it. He says that's how cheap it is. He says, Patron. No, nobody drinks Patron. He said, forget Patron. So I'm telling you.
And that's why it's got an awesome reef.
That's right. And for ladies and gentlemen, I always want to tell you that I have a new website that's coming up.
Nice.
It's being worked on right now. It should be up sometime. I'm hoping by next week because I am leaving web.com because it costs me too much money. And my cousin, who's the film director and producer and writer, she's producing it for me.
Nice.
I saw the beginning of it. It is smoking. Smoking. So there will be no more entries on my present website. We will still keep that same name, but we're going to go to a new website. We'll talk about it next week. And it's going to be an interactive website, everything in motion. It's going to be beautiful.
I like that.
And what was the name of the theme song we just started out with?
I'm sorry. I don't know. What was the name?
You know it.
What is it?
The Planet of the Apes.
Oh, The Planet of the Apes. Was that the original?
The original theme.
Okay, I was just going to say, because I know that wasn't any...
The original theme. And before, and there's a reason why I played that. We've got to get into that, but I want to lead into that by saying...
Because you're saying that we have a Congress of Apes?
Well, not exactly. Yes, that's what I'm saying, but not exactly. You heard of the F-22?
I've heard of it, yes.
The
F-22. I try not to fly.
Okay. When the U.S. sought to assure Asian allies that it would defend them against potential aggression in North Korea this spring, the Pentagon deployed its top-of-the-line jet fighter, the F-22 Raptor. But only two jets were sent screaming through the skies of South Seoul.
Mm-hmm.
That token show of American force was a stark reminder that the U.S. may have few F-22s to spare. Alarmed by soaring costs, the Defense Department shut down production last year at $67.3 billion. That's what it be. Billion. 188 planes. Leaving the Air Force to rely on its fleet of 30-year-old conventional fighters. Well, that's sort of an oxymoron too, because the aircraft might be 30 years old. Equipment is like last week. Mm-hmm. There are no other aircraft that compete with the F-15 or the F-16s in the air today with our new electronic equipment on the aircraft. Okay, so that's an oxymoron, but
I mean, let's be honest. When we say, "Oh, it's our 30-year-old plane,"
it's probably a 50-year-old plane. But,
but that's still like a good half century ahead of everything.
Yes,
so
right.
It's kind of like saying, you know, "Oh, our really bad space program."
Right. Well, see, the reason why I'm saying this is because Lockheed Martin F-22 is the most lethal fighter in jet the world today, but it also became a symbol of broken procurement process that's failing to deliver advanced weapon systems on time, on budget, and in sufficient quantities. The F-22 was originally intended to replace all the Air Force's F-15 combat jets that date back to the 1970s, but today still represent the bulk of the so-called superiority aircraft. Okay, now, the reason why...
I want you to repeat something.
Yes.
The reason
why...
We do not have these...
Because of...
A broken procurement process.
Broken procurement process.
Failing to deliver.
Failing to deliver.
Our advanced weapon systems.
And insufficient quantities.
Or on budget.
Right.
And that's the key. Because that's happening all across the world. It's this graft system that's really, really problematic.
Well, listen, Nate, now we're getting into it. The early cancellation led to the new advanced warplane, the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter that Lockheed also produces. Today, nearly 400, that's 400 billion dollar system is headed in the same direction as the F-22, behind schedule and counting serious
software production problems
and suffering from sharp cost growth.
Right. That's because they always claim they can roll something out for 50 cents, and then it ends up costing a million.
The military launches ambitious programs based on lowball estimates that contractors jump on. Eager to spend speed money to the home states, members of Congress allocate funds for these leading edge. Oh, now what do they call that? Pork?
Well, this is literally, Mike, literally.
Literally.
When pigs fly.
Oh.
Right here.
That's right. When predictable engineering problems cause costs to explode, Congress typically reacts by cutting the flow of money. Production is then curtailed, and the Pentagon searches for a lower-cost weapons system in a vicious cycle. Everybody involved would be more realistic and didn't lie about risk, technical difficulty, and cost. We would have these problems solved. Okay, this guy is talking about 50 years of production. Okay, The F-22 experienced almost every one of these problems. The Air Force began laying plans to build the F-22 in the early 80s.
Yeah, that's 1980s. People.
That's right, 1980s.
That would be
not 1880, 1980.
That would be last millennium, though.
That's right.
Be honest.
A decade later, it's estimated it would take 9 years at $12.6 billion to develop the jet fighter. That's on top of the $67.3 billion. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it ended up taking 19 years and cost $26.3 billion, not including the production of any aircraft.
That's just to get you
that's the cost to get there.
The spiffy plan.
To just get you the plans on the chalkboard.
So you still don't have a single
plan.
You ain't
got a plan. By the time production was completed, the F-22 cost averaged over $412 million each, up from the original estimate of $149 million.
Well, I just want to assure the government of one thing. At a cost savings of $25 billion. Mm-hmm. $25 billion. I'll save them today.
You know, I forgot to.
At $25 billion savings, I assure them they put $1 billion on the table. I, too, will not deliver an aircraft. But I will have saved them money. Please consider that proposal. I could actually use the money quite well. And I would actually create a mini boom in my locality, in the economy, as I invest those dollars. And they'd be right here at home, people. Now that is the patriotic act. So here's the problem I have with all of this. And you know, we went through this under the Bush years quite extravagantly. There's a system, which we used to call the, you know, old boy network, this little buddy system in military contracting, where it's always the same people, and they give each other contracts, and they give each other, you know, all these programs. And if you remember quite well, the Cheney administration, it was very famous for doing no-bid contracts because they said, oh, no, our friends and family network will take care of it. Don't you worry. They assure us they'll deliver it on time, on budget, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is what happens, though. They don't only not deliver it. The cost goes up over tenfold, and you're talking not We'll deliver it by next year, sir. They've been working on this since the 80s, and they still can't deliver? You know, they keep, oh, it'll be 9 years. Oh, it'll be 19 years. Oh, it'll be, you know, oh, come on. So somebody's lying, and somebody's putting a whole heck of a lot of money in their pockets. And I think what they should do, instead of relying on a, because the problem is they always say, well, it's all secret and sensitive, and we need to rely on these people who are trustworthy, secret and sensitive dudes. But, you know, if they're lying and stealing your money, I think you ought to open the process up and let there be honest bidding from companies.
Well,
everywhere.
And here's the thing. He said, apart from the cost, the F-22's complexity led to serious safety problems. It had 7 major crashes, 2 of them fatal. Mm-hmm. Defects in the F-22's novel oxygen supply system led to a 3-month-long grounding last year, and no pilots want to fly it because of the oxygen problem.
Well, and also because of all the other technical problems. They've had computer glitches. They've got look, these things now are so fast. They're so powerful that they will black pilots out. They will do different things if there's any flaw. So you have to literally rely on that software that we talk about, you know, software glitches. You have to rely on that to live. And if there's a problem, you die. It's not like, oopsie, whoopsie, you know, it didn't steer right and the rudder didn't do this and the button didn't have it. No, there is no fix if it messes up the program.
Here's some more stuff here. A lot of was writing. See, because there were 2 companies in the prototype field designing for this, the Lockheed YF-22 and the Northrop YF-23. And there was a lot was riding on the technical merits of the aircraft. Northrop had already built the B-22 stealth bomber. It also won the fighter competition. It would have held a virtual monopoly on Air Force combat jets. At the same time, Northrop's reputation was impaired by a wide range of fraud investigations, putting Lockheed in a stronger position for a stronger political position.
Right.
It said, and then the pilot said, we didn't care. Ron Johnson, who was a test pilot, said, hey, we didn't care which jet it was, but the problem was that we wanted a jet that was safe. So now it goes back to the same thing. That comparing them, in this article they compare the jets and it's really insufficient
to talk
about that. But there's a stronger point I'm getting to.
Well, look, this is a key right here. This guy Sherman Mullen, former head of Lockheed F-22 program.
Right.
Now he's a fierce advocate for it.
Right, and he's saying
he says though it was a victim of this. But here's what he says: it was a victim of. The system is totally broken, and everybody knows it.
That's right.
So he's saying that it's a game system. Everybody knows that all this stuff, the fraud, the this and that, the other, it goes down the whole chain, so they can't deliver a product. They can't deliver a safe product. They can't deliver even a functioning product. And we're still pouring money into it, like a black hole.
I have a problem now. I have a problem. $600 billion spent on these 2 aircraft? $600 billion, that's 600 with a B.
Look.
Okay, $600 billion, and we have spent, we fed $50 million or $100 million on producing health care, and in a rollout of 2 to 3 weeks, they want to scrap the whole thing? And yet we work with this since 1980, throwing money at the cash cow, and they did nothing about it? Are we insane?
No, this is the problem. All of this stuff, and it's just like during the Bush years, every time an investigation got started, what did they say? National security. Don't ask, don't tell. Ha-ha. And
they didn't even have investigations on these because it's the Pentagon, DOD, and this is expected to happen.
But this is also why they have blocked, and go back and look at the record, for maybe 40 now years, they have blocked every accounting effort on the Pentagon.
Well, we know what it is. Because we've been getting accounts of this for the last, the last 10 years.
They haven't even allowed an official accounting of
Of course not.
Vietnam, because of all the fraud and overruns everywhere.
But
because
you see,
people knew and could see where the money's going. You know, like the truckload stuff in Iraq.
But you see, forget the people. The people mean nothing. Please, that's scoff. You know, we keep going, well, the people want me to do this. That's crap. That's baloney. People don't care, and they're living in their little glass houses, and they don't care what it costs. That's nonsense. I don't want to hear about people. See, you being nice. Baloney. People don't know nothing. Half the people don't even vote. Please, the people are full of shit. I'm tired of hearing about people. People deserve the government they get because they don't do nothing about it. They don't do nothing about it.
So when are they going to start doing
it? They ain't going to do nothing about it ever because there ain't enough people to make them do anything about it.
But that's part of the problem. If they don't have any kind of oversight and there's no accountability,
they're going to
keep...
Ain't going to change. Hey, it's that way for the future. It's that way for the millennium. And the problem is I'm trying to get to health care. They're screaming about this, and this has been going on since 1980. $600 billion has been spent on two aircraft.
Right. And that's why...
And nobody said anything.
That's because it's the... You can't talk about
No, but nobody said anything, but they're talking about Obamacare.
Because that's...
Why?
BS.
Because... A black president, our first, was doing it. If George Bush or Clinton was in there, this never would have come up about health care.
That's why they didn't say anything when Bush did put through the
Medicare. Well, I'm getting to that also. Medicare. People don't know about this Medicare? Medicare Part D came out in 2006 and was a complete disaster. Okay? It came out January 1st, 2006, and it switched over. It switched over 6 million people at once. One out of every 5 people that were switched over was lost in the shuffle, had no insurance whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
One out of every 5 of the people that were switched over for months had no insurance.
So where's the scandal? Where's the shutdown?
Okay.
Where's the screaming?
They did not. There was just they had an investigation, and the Democrats said to the congressional people, "Let us help you to make this better."
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Let us help you to make this better. That's what they said. Let us help you. And I want to play something for you about Mr. Tim Murphy, Republican Representative Tim Murphy. This is what Tim Murphy said about the Medicare expansion.
Anytime something is new, there's going to be some glitches. All of us, when our children were new, well, we knew as parents, we didn't exactly know everything we were doing, and we had a follow-up or two, but we persevered, and our children turned out well.
That's what he said. That's what Representative Tim Murphy said from Pennsylvania.
Right.
That's exactly what he said. And you know, that is absolutely correct. There shouldn't have been anything really negative about what went on, because people just, you know, when you produce a large sea change, and you have a product that is, I mean, this product is huge. It's huge, and it will take a long, long time to let go. They were talking about it on the news the other day. They said, you know, why don't they just do a beta project? Mm-hmm. Well, because they would have done the same thing every single day with the beta product. So, therefore, if it took 2 months to do it, you would have had 60 days constantly pounding in the ground about how horrible this program was. Because what is – please explain to us what a beta project does.
Well, here's the thing. They want to – what they should actually have done is taken plenty of time and rolled out a fantastic product developed over
years. They've been developing over 3 years. But it was never tested by CGI from Canada, who is the overall a CG on the project.
Well, the problem is, again, under constant attack and derision and, you know, trying to defund it anyway, they try to rush something out and it has glitches. But again, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you're trying to rush something out under fire instead of everybody being behind it. What if all this time the Republicans would have spent time saying, hey, let's invest anything it takes to get it right. Let's do it. You know, we're going to have to do this freaking law. Let's do it.
It's a law already.
Right.
It's a law already.
All these games. So, here's the thing. There's a comedian, John Fugelsang. Says things all the time about the Republicans, right? But this is the point. He said, you know the funniest thing about the Obamacare site glitches? No matter how bad the rollout is, no matter how bad it fails, everything else, no matter what they say, didn't cost the American taxpayers $24.7 billion.
That's right.
That the shutdown did.
That's right.
So you can complain all day long, the screen doesn't work.
You heard, and just because the software doesn't work, that doesn't mean that the healthcare don't work.
Exactly.
They're two different things. Okay, but see, they're trying to tie the software into a healthcare. Okay. Well, then, therefore, we've spent 20 or 30 years now on developing the YF-22 and the F-35. I mean, so you're telling me that, and this is a far more interactive problem than producing those aircraft. Because we have 300 million people, or 50 million people, that we need to get covered who have all different last names, or a lot of them have the same names, which makes it even more difficult. We now have to make, they all have different insurance companies. We have to mesh those insurance companies. Some of those insurance companies don't even want to transition into healthcare, and they're dropping out of the program. So we get people saying, oh, just like you said, I'm losing my doctor and I'm losing my health care program. No. It's, oh, yeah, I'm losing my doctor, losing my health care program, and it's costing me more. Well, you had the cheapo program where you were paying $5 a month for your insurance, but you didn't get pap smears, you didn't get colonoscopies, you didn't get preventive health care, you didn't see your doctor more than twice a year, you had to pay copays. So now all those things have to be done. And, of course, you're going to pay a couple of bucks more. But the problem is, if those insurance companies don't want to do that, they're dropping you and they're blaming it on Obamacare.
Right.
That's bull. That's a lot of crap.
But this is the way that used to. They would drop you in a heartbeat.
They drop you in a heartbeat. Now they can't.
Yeah, if they said you had a pre-existing.
That's right.
Like you were alive.
That's right.
Pre-existing. But they would drop you in a heartbeat. Now they can't.
Hey, your child is on your health care program. They're 26 now.
Again, you've got assured real insurance versus you're paying for
no lifetime cap.
Right.
For catastrophic. No lifetime cap. Oh, let me play this other thing. Now, that was Tim Murphy back in 2006, Republican, when the rollout for Medicare D was. He said, you know, there's a lot of glitches when you're bringing up children. Mm-hmm. So we expect that. This is what Tim Murphy is saying now about the Affordable Care Act.
We were promised a website where people could easily compare plans and costs. $500 million later, we find the American public have been dumped with the ultimate cash for clunkers, except they had to pay the cash and still got the clunker. Congress should press pause on the tech surge and figure out what went wrong first before throwing good money after bad and forcing the public to use a broken site. In addition to explaining why this disaster happened, we want an explanation on how this system will be fixed, what it will cost, how long it will take. After footing the bill, the American people deserve something that works or start over.
Now, this is a guy who said, hey, give us a break. I met a kid. And it hasn't cost $500 million. Lying through his teeth.
Well,
of course, he wasn't with any reporters that would question him about that figure.
Mm-hmm.
He just lied through his teeth.
Well,
they're all liars. When you see the mouth moving, they're lying.
To reference the other conversation on the military, you know, where's the outrage that they haven't gotten a ship into the air since the 1980s, but yet they still pour money into it every single year?
Well,
that's real. That's real. That's not a website. That's an actual functioning airplane that ain't flying around.
Absolutely. I mean, we got pilots dying in these aircraft.
This guy's complaining that it isn't as smooth as Travelocity or something. You know, maybe we needed to hire Shatner to do some ads or something.
We
ticker up there that will flip around.
Yeah, well, what was that thing? Travelocity? It was eBay.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. eBay wasn't putting 550 million people together. You had to come to eBay.
Yeah.
It wasn't matching people. Yeah, and then I reach out some other stuff here. And in 1933, when they're pushing through Social Security, they had the same problem. Because back then, they didn't have Social Security numbers.
Right.
And everybody, millions of people had the same last name.
Yeah.
How did you sort that out? It wasn't done in a roll-up. They didn't have computers.
And worst thing is they had to do it on paper.
They had to do it on paper.
Look it up in the files.
It took 7 years.
Yeah.
7 years. Okay. Yes. And they fought him every step of the way. But he got it through. And
like,
then we have...
What if we would have spent the $24 billion that we just blew on turning the lights out?
Right.
What if we would have spent it on a fantastic Mac Daddy software system? I bet you would have had a massive one for $24 million.
I don't think that's the problem.
No, it isn't. I'm just saying.
The problem is not the software. It's the implementation of insurance companies. That's why he brought the 25 heads of the biggest insurance companies into the White House last week.
Yeah.
He said, you guys are the frontier.
Cool.
Because you are not given the input data to the computer so it can correlate it.
Yeah.
That's the problem. The insurance companies, and they figure the longer they can keep people off this, they can make that high-cost money, and then when they finally go to it, they can make it on both sides.
Yeah.
They don't lose.
Yeah, it's a win-win.
And the thing is, you know, the 25 biggest, I said, but there's about 500 insurance companies out there. Maybe 5,000 insurance companies out there. And most of these little insurance companies that have been screwing people left and right. My daughter came in and said, one of the people that works for her said her husband's so upset because their insurance company that he works for, the company he works for, is dropping everybody because of Obamacare. So I said, look, ask her husband, does he have a lifetime cap on insurance? Ask her, are the kids covered? Ask her, does he have a pre-existing condition? Ask her, does he have two doctor's visits free a year?
Right.
Ask her if he has his, colonoscopy free once a year. Once a year for him. I said, ask her just those little things like that and see if she comes back. And then ask her, does she really want that? Or she wants to go along the same way she's been doing before.
Mm. And look, it does have impact. Look, besides the implementation of the website, you've got you know, the dragging resistance of Republicans everywhere. You know, the companies have been, you know, employers that are saying they don't want to follow it. They don't want to do anything with their employees. And then you got people like our governor who are saying, I'm not even going to have, you know, Obamacare in my state. So that all of that creates problems, drag, resistance, everything else. And it does reflect real world. For instance, just this week, 2 days ago, my watch company, which I won't name here and all, the insurance there that we've had through them.
Watch company?
No.
Oh, your wife's company.
Watch company.
Oh, okay.
But they just announced a 10% increase.
Yeah.
Immediately on the insurance.
They're not in Obamacare yet. So they're going to be dropped.
It's because they're playing. They're sitting there because of what they're doing here in North Carolina only. It just affects us. But we've now become, because of our governor, you know, at the highest insurance rate state.
Well, I'm going to have our insurance commissioner on next week.
Right.
And he's going to tell us how this is going to work.
But that's the game plan. Nothing to do with the law.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, we're in Charlotte, North Carolina, in case you did not know. And if you want to call in, 646-716-5242. And I messed up and didn't get our Senator Malcolm Grant, who's supposed to be calling in. He's running for Mel Watts seat, and I hope he does call in.
Right.
I am going to just send him another message.
But these things, they have real-world impact, but the thing that has the most impact is not the fact that, you know, the first day you roll out a website, all the buttons don't click and turn a blue color or something. Mm-hmm. It's that you have people actively trying to destroy. And that's what we have with these, like, Tea Partiers
in
Washington. It's not just that they're complaining from the sidelines and going, huh, look at there, the website didn't work on day one.
Yeah.
No, they shut down the government. They turned off the lights. They walked away. They are trying to burn the building down to the ground to do anything they can to stop a valid law and the functioning of government. And so they end up costing billions, you know, which we just got to pull out of our, you know, wherever.
Well,
and that's real-world consequences versus faux controversy about the website has glitches.
Well,
like you said, the law is the law. The health care is there. The fact that a website didn't quite function on day one the way it's supposed to, so what? The other day on Monday, they had a glitch. Nobody could post on Facebook. Nobody could do anything on Facebook because there was a glitch.
And how long has Facebook been out?
I know. So, right?
How long? Hey, you mean
no,
they haven't got
this
the picture?
This happens every day all the time. You know, sometimes you can't get on Twitter or Google.
I couldn't
get
on my daggone computer 2 hours ago.
Well, you know, that's we don't want to talk about, you know, Microsoft's basic operating system. But I'm kidding.
How long have they been in? Yeah. How long have they been in business?
But,
they ain't fixed it yet?
The fact that there was a computer glitch on a huge system.
So what?
That's every day, people. That's not the issue. But the issue is when you hijack a government, hold it hostage, shut it down, do things like that, that is driving an entire nation into a ditch.
Well, yeah, and see, you could also now call the numbers. The numbers are working, and they can do it by paperwork. You say, well, how can you do a paperwork when they still got to enter the same information? Well, the thing is, they don't have to. They go past the information portion, and they go directly to the computer. The portion of this program that's the holdup is the information taking down your data. And we're going to get to that because that's one of the most important things because this we have a moron named Joe Barton from Texas who says, oh, that's against HIPAA laws. Well, he is so ignorant. And, you know, is everybody ignorant in Texas? I mean, I don't understand. Well, let me read this one thing from Representative Diane, and they don't know a damn thing about software. So I don't even know why they're even talking. Why do they have do the talking? Because they don't know nothing about software. All they know is about Twitter and Facebook. They don't have software works. So this is Diane DeGette, who's the Democrat from Colorado. She questioned what Murphy said. And here's what she had to say about Medicare Part D.
I was on this committee in 2006 when Medicare Part D was implemented during the Bush administration. Let's not forget what a mess it was and the significant problem seniors had with registering for the new benefit. But I also want to remind my colleagues on both sides of the aisle that the difficulties passed and were soon forgotten amid the success of Part D.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, we have a great representative here in North Carolina. One of the great ones is G.K. Butterfield. Here's what G.K. Butterfield said at that same hearing.
On Monday, Congressman Daryl Issa, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, wrote a letter, which was publicly released, accusing the White House of injecting politics into decisions about the website. According to Chairman Issa's press release, the White House made, quote, the political decision to mask the sticker shock of Obamacare to the American people. It's a very serious allegation for the chairman of an oversight committee to make such a callous accusation. Based on the meeting with your company last week, Mr. Issa's letter wrote that, quote, evidence is mounting that political considerations motivated this decision. Do you have any knowledge of any White House role in specific decisions relating to the website?
Not to my knowledge.
And are you aware of any political intervention by this White House relating to your work on healthcare.gov?
I am not.
So why are we having these meetings?
Right.
By the way, these meetings over Thursday and Friday were attended by less than a quarter of the representatives, because most of them were at a funeral in some place in the southeast. So they didn't even care enough to be there because they know it's a joke. Issa wasn't even there.
Yeah, Issa, the poster boy.
Issa wasn't even there. So, you know, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about here?
Benghazi gate or anything else, just ginning up as much as they can, any kind of controversy. But, end result,
yes,
there is nothing here. We're talking about nothing.
Well, I don't know. You might be wrong, because we have this famous great representative from Texas, Joe Barton. Let's just see what Joe Barton said.
All right.
But you're telling every American, if you sign up for this or even attempt to, you have no reasonable expectation of privacy. That is a direct contradiction to HIPAA, and you know it.
I started out in my opening statement saying there was no legitimacy to this hearing, and the last line of questioning certainly confirms that. HIPAA only applies when there's health information being provided. That's not in play here today. No health information is required in the application process, and why is that? Because pre-existing conditions don't matter. So once again, here we have my Republican colleagues trying to scare everybody.
Will the gentleman yield?
No, I will not yield to this monkey court or whatever this thing is.
This is not a monkey court.
Do whatever you want. I'm not yielding.
And that's the reason why I played the Planet of the Apes as our opening theme, because it is a monkey court.
It is.
Anytime Daryl Issa and his cronies get involved in anything, it's a monkey court. Right now we have a gentleman calling in right now. Hello, who's this?
This is Senator Malcolm Graham. How are you doing?
Senator Malcolm Graham, that wants to join the monkey court in the United States House of Representatives. I can't believe it.
I'm just naive enough to think that I can go there and make a difference and represent the people of the 12th Congressional District with some moderation.
Well, moderation?
Hey.
Now, wait a minute. You got to bring bananas and peanuts with you.
Yeah, because
Well, you know, I mean, we got to take back the House of Representatives. We got to have a strong 2014 and elected Democrats. And, you know, even Republicans, because it's bipartisan, that can find the moral middle. And that's what we're missing in Washington, D.C. We need to get away, as you correctly say, the sideshow and talk about issues that are impacting the American people. And that's what I want to do.
I just want to add something real quick. I hate to even use it. Mike loves to use the term, but I don't even like saying Obamacare. But anyway, with the whole Obamacare-esque circus that we've been going through, it's one thing to have disagreements and, you know, policy headbutting going on. I expect that all day long. You know, work it out, get some compromises on that. That's what the Affordable Health Care Act, to begin with, was. It was a compromise between the parties. But I get tired of the hypocrisy, the misrepresentations. You know, we famously Paul Jr. The other day said that misinformation works, and that's what they should do more of, which was an appalling statement. But the fact that they will just outright lie, and then the final straw to me was the shutting down of the government. Now, just to verify something real quick, so that we know, you know, because you're running for representative, you're running to actually be part of the government, is it not a fact that President Obama does not write nor pass law? Is that correct?
He signs the law, and that makes him a party of the negotiation by his signature of vetoing the law. And so everybody has a
response. So all along, demanding that he change the law, that he repeal the law, you can say that all day long, and it will not matter, right? Because the Congress has to write laws and vote them. Is that correct?
Exactly. Obviously, the executive branch needs to input and have influence on shaping the law, but it is the responsibility of the Senate and the House, honest men and women from get both parties coming together to form legislation for the president's signature. So you're absolutely right in that respect.
And that's what one thing that made me so mad about the shutdown. We heard over and over and over that, you know, they're going to force Obama to come back and repeal his dictatorial law and this and that and the other, this thing he was imposing on Americans. This was a law that they wrote, they passed.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. The law was passed by the House, passed by the Senate, signed by the president, reaffirmed by the Supreme Court and the people by electing the president for a second term. It goes without saying that this piece of legislation is not perfect. It needs to be amended. It needs to be massaged. But, you know, when Social Security and Medicaid was first introduced to the American people, it wasn't perfect either. But over the test of time, with both parties working together to find common ground, we enjoy those benefits today. And I think 30 years from now, 20 years from now, my children and my grandchildren will say, what was all the fuss about providing affordable health care to every American? So, you know, I think the Republican Party need to accept that it is law and work with Democrats to, like you, we take our cars for a tune-up, we rotate the tires, we change the oil, we add spark plugs. We don't throw away the car. We just try to improve the performance of it. And that's what we have to do, improve the performance of the Affordable Care Act right from the implementation by making sure that the computers work so that the hundreds of thousands and millions of American folks who want to enroll can do so. And then over a period of time, both parties need to come together and find ways to make sure that this law has the impact that the American people need.
Well, you see, but you're in the state Senate right now in North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
I cannot believe for the life of me that 90% of the, well, regressive party, as I call it, in the Senate, and 90% of the progressive party in the House want this state government to go in the direction that they're going. But they are scared of the Tea Party and what can be influenced by Art Pope. Am I right? Am I right on that?
Well, I think you're right in the fact that the Republican Party over the course of the last 9 months have done significant damage to North Carolinians, from not expanding Medicaid to not expanding unemployment insurance, by disguising a tax cut for the rich as tax reform, by treating teachers in a terrible way, by telling women that they can't choose what to do with their bodies. I can go on and on in terms of what the Republican Party and Art Pope and even Governor McCrory has done to the state. They have turned a progressive North Carolina into the laughing stock of the country. And the laughing continues based on what happened, I guess, two or three days ago about this Republican office holder that basically said that the voter verification was to make sure that black people don't get ahead. He basically said it. So they got some problems within their party.
But we're grateful that now they're taking off their sheets and showing everybody what they really think, aren't we?
He said publicly what a lot of Republicans have said privately in their own homes about this voter verification. We know exactly what it is. It's about denying, not saying that you cannot vote, but making it harder and creating artificial barriers for those who wish to vote. And they're doing it to make sure that students and people of color and the elderly and other individuals who tend to vote Democrat don't vote.
Well, and just because you said that, I have a little clip here.
Right here in Buncombe County, there's always one or two that voted twice a year. They don't know
one or 2 million people?
No, one or two people.
And that's one or two out of how many?
That's just one or two out of 60,000.
So statistically, there is enough voter fraud to sway zero elections.
That's not the point.
So then he further went on and said,
"The bottom line is the law is not racist."
Of course, the law is not racist, and you are not racist.
Well, I've been called a bigot before. Let me tell you something. You don't look like me, but I think I've treated you the same as I would anybody else.
Right.
Matter of fact, one of my best friends is black.
One of your best friends?
One of my best friends.
Is black?
Yes.
And there's more.
When I was a young man, you didn't call a black a black. You called him a Negro. I had a picture one time of Obama sitting on a stump as a witch doctor, and I posted that on Facebook. I was making fun of my white half of Obama, not the black half. And now you have a black person using the term this, that, and it's okay for them to do it.
You know that we can hear you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know that. You know that we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then I found out the real reason for the law.
The law is going to kick the Democrats in the butt.
Wow. An executive GOP committee member just admitted that this law isn't designed to hurt black people. It's designed to hurt Democrats.
If it hurts a bunch of college kids that's too lazy to get up off their bohunkus and go get a photo ID, so be it.
Right.
If it hurts the whites, so be it. If it hurts a bunch of lazy blacks that wants the government to give them everything, so be it.
And it just so happens that a lot of those people vote Democrat.
Gee.
So this goes back to Senator Graham, everything you just said in your last three paragraphs.
Well, he basically said publicly what a number of people have said privately in caucuses and all across this country. It's just not North Carolina. It's in Pennsylvania. It's in Texas and North Carolina, South Carolina. What's happening here is this. The Republican Party cannot control national public policy. So they're going to states where they have a Republican governor and a Republican-controlled General Assemblies, and they're passing these laws state by state. And North Carolina is just the latest example, having just recently turned Republican in terms of the executive mansion, the Senate, and the House. So you're seeing all these national-type policies. And make no mistake about it, the Voter Identification Act is a national-wide play that the Republican Party wanted to do, and they're making this happen in states where they control. So it's no, the guy said last year, remember, in Pennsylvania that they did it so that Romney can win the state of Pennsylvania, and he said, done.
Right.
Well, obviously Romney didn't win, but the fact is that this is a national strategy to help Republicans and disenfranchise the Democratic Party and its members, students, African-Americans, the elderly, and those people of color who would tend to vote Democratic and not Republican. And that's why the Attorney General is in the state of North Carolina, has filed suit, and is taking out state to court, because this is yet another example of hidden racism. And it's not very hidden. It's right out there in the public for all of us to see. And the gentleman on last night basically told everybody what people
Absolutely.
Are saying.
Well, you know, before I ask you about the Attorney General, what is your strategy when you become the U.S. District Representative from the 12th District? How are you going to approach your fellow Republicans who want to get out of this hole but don't know how to stop digging?
Well, the first thing they got to do, they got to stand up within their parties and tell people what they believe. And they have to fight the fight within their own party. And certainly Democrats can't help them do that. They're just going to have some political courage to do what is right and not what is popular. And so we need moderate Republicans from the old school, the Bob Doles, the Bob Bakers, all those guys from the past, new Republicans to develop the same backbone. And some of these guys simply don't have any backbone. So we're going to have to, they're going to have to work within their own party to solve problems. And I'm not sure how they do that.
But you see, now, don't they realize that by 2050, they won't hold a seat in this United States? I mean,
well, you know,
last gas.
Well, one thing about Republicans, they can't seem to count. they can't seem to know that the demographics are changing, the country is getting browner, and they're not in the majority anymore. And so you would think that they would do things that would be in their best interest, but they tend not to do so.
Let me correct something, because I think this is where y'all are both under a mistaken thought. I think they can count, and I think that's the problem. The problem is for the counting is money, and that's where greed is on that system. I think the worst decision in modern history came out of the Supreme Court was granting unlimited waterfalls of money into the elections. And when that happened, you have individuals like the Koch brothers or corporations that are now buying elections, and they'll just find anyone who will be their pawn and then give them unlimited amounts of money to overwhelm all the competition and get forced into office so that then they can eradicate policies that they don't like, be it, you know, removing regulations or getting favorable.
Well, but the money has not been the problem here. The money is
no,
that people that haven't
is,
voted.
No, the
money, people haven't voted.
No, but this is what's happened to the Republican Party. Because like you
were
talking about.
Yeah, Republican Party. Okay.
Any moderate now who even dares raise his head or speak up is snipered by their own party.
Yeah.
But it's not their party.
Yeah.
It's these billionaires.
Yeah.
But they take them out in primaries now so that there is no actual politician being elected.
Yeah.
There's just a tool being elected. Is there a plan?
Yeah.
What are the Democrats going to do about that? Because I don't think it's going to get better because the Republicans are being taken out one by one. They're being snipered.
Yeah, but every time they take out, they lose another seat.
I realize they're losing seats, but at the time they're also controlling things, because I'll remind you while you went on vacation, they just shut down the number one nation on earth.
Yeah, well, I saw that in Mexico.
They literally
they
shut the
that.
Government down. No, but so this is a small handful of people who have profound effect. It doesn't matter if there's few in number. If they refuse to ever do anything and burn the building down, hey, everybody suffers.
Well,
so what are we going to do, though, to fix the broken system so that we can actually have elections where people's actual choices are elected and not just whoever's got the biggest, baddest chest?
Well, U.S. Candidate and next 12th District Representative, is there anything that the Democrats can do to answer that question? I don't know if anything we can do about it. What do you think, Mr. Graham, Senator Graham? Is there anything the Democrats can do to prevent the remedy another shutdown, which is looming probably in March or February?
Mm.
And you'll be there. Do we lose you?
No, no. We may have lost the
Senate. Oh. Hello. Hello.
So we may have lost the
sense. Oh, man.
Here I am. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No, you're not. Okay. Is there anything?
I'm going to have to. I heard the question. I think the Democrats are just going to have to stand strong and do what is right and not what is popular. And I think the right thing to do is to defend the Affordable Care Act because it's the law of the land. And I don't think the Republicans are crazy enough to shut down government. I think they flirted with it. They came close to the edge. And by the Democrats standing strong and holding their ground, the Republicans blank. I think they will do it again. I think the president, as he ends his second term, needs to be presidential and be a leader and lead the country. And even if that means certainly standing up to the Republicans. And one of the things about Speaker Boehner, and I'll say this and I don't have to get off the phone, you know, sometimes as an elected official, if you don't put your job in jeopardy, you're not a leader. You're just going along for the ride. And and so as a leader, he's going to have to look his party in the eye and say, this is wrong. It's wrong for our party. It's wrong for our country. And I will work with the other elected officials, Democrats or Republicans, to do what's in the best interest of the country and not the party. And he has to stand strong and do that. And if he doesn't do that, then he's just going along for the walk. He's not a leader. And I think he demonstrated that. It took him 2 weeks to do it. But he has to stand and look his constituents in the eye. And even if it means he has to sacrifice himself, he has to be a leader and do that. And what this country is missing is statesmanship. And we need that on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. And Mike, you remember when I was on city council, I made a tough decision in reference to the city's MWBE program. A lot of people thought that I was putting my seat in jeopardy, and I was. And you know, my background is in minority business development, so I could have told the community what they wanted to hear, or I could have told them the truth. And I told them the truth, even though it impacted me politically. They needed to know the truth. And that's the type of leader I am. That's the type of leader I will be if I get to the United States Congress. And that's the type of leader Speaker Boehner needs. He needs to tell his party what's right. Now, lastly, I know that sometimes doing what is right is not popular, but I also know that sometimes doing what is popular is not right. And again, Speaker Boehner has to decide whether or not he wants to be a popular politician and do what is right for the party or do what is right for the country. And hopefully he would do what is right for our country.
Well, where can people phone in if they want to help campaign, go out and volunteer for the election? How can I get a hold of you?
Great question. You can go to my website at MalcolmGrahamForCongress.com. That's MalcolmGrahamForCongress.com. They can hit me up on Facebook. They can follow me on Twitter, or they can call me in 704-576-4568. Convenient way to do it is just go online at MalcolmGrahamForCongress, and you can sign up to volunteer. You can learn more about me and my background. You can get information about my issues. If you want to make a contribution, I appreciate that as well. But it's our virtual office, and you can go there and go to my Facebook page as well as my Twitter account. So go to the website, and all the information is right there for your convenience.
Okay. I'm going to see you later tonight, and I'd like you, if you can, next Friday, come on and give one more last pitch to the group here who is listening. Because I want to make sure that the people understand, you know, everybody thought well of Mel Watt, and we're not losing anything. I hope we're gaining a younger perspective view on things with you coming into that seat.
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And as you know, I'm a hard worker. I've been out here 6 years on the Charlotte City Council, 10 years as a member of the state Senate. I managed a nonprofit organization for 10 years. I worked at Time Warner, worked at Bank of America. So I've been involved in community affairs in the Charlotte area since I graduated from Johnson C. Smith. So I enjoy what I do. I'm not interested in the position. I want the job. And so hopefully the voters of the 12th Congressional District will hire me once the congressman is confirmed. Thank you very much for your support, Mike.
Very good. And since I'm now in the 12th Congressional District, since I was redistricted out of the 8th, I am going to be help getting that done. Okay.
I appreciate you, man.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. That is Senator Malcolm Graham, who is going to, State Senator Malcolm Graham, who is going to be the, barring earthquake or famine, the next representative from the 12th District for the U.S. House.
Yes.
And, go ahead, you were saying.
Oh, I just want to, since we touched on it, let me point this out. I'm going to read this list because we just talked about the shutdown.
You got a list?
I'm going to read this list. This is some of the things that the Republicans, and this is what gets back to, you know, he was talking about leadership, which, you know, Boehner, sadly. Boehner has no leadership because, you know, he was saying he needs to choose and be popular or not. Well, he's already chosen. Look at their
he could resign, but
their
I guess, I guess he could resign, but I guess drinking and playing golf, you can only do that so long without being an alcoholic, huh?
Hey, I remember Caddyshack. That was a good movie. but anyway, you remember the old judge, right? Check me. Just my perspective. So the Republican Party asked, this is the thing. They were demanding the end of Obamacare.
Demanded.
They wanted to repeal this, and they went to the brink. They shut the government down.
But they knew it wasn't going to happen.
But listen to this, what people – listen to again. We demand the end of Obamacare. That's what they said. This is what they put in writing when they presented it to them. Yeah, they defund Obamacare. Yeah, repeal all that, right? And the usual stuff. They want to deny birth control.
Oh, yeah.
They want to deny sex education, all that kind of stuff.
Anything that they
you know, that usual stuff. But
they didn't want to deny sex, did they?
Well, they.
Oh yes.
Well, only you know, no matter.
There's a few of them.
So
they don't have sex with their wives. That's the thing.
Their usual stuff. You know, they're going to go and, you know, let's deny anything that has anything to do with sexuality or whatever. Okay, but at least they can, you know, pretend that's somehow related to health care. But this is the part that gets me. They're while claiming that they have to shut the government down for Obamacare, they were asking for this, instantaneous approval of the Keystone Pipeline.
Oh, yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Change to all federal employees' pensions, elimination of old age pensions. Expansion of oil drilling to all national lands, parks, everywhere else. All
New York City, areas. Underground, where the subways are? Yeah.
You know, if you've got a backyard, there's an oil rig.
That's dang right.
It. Okay. The removal and blocking of all net neutrality laws in America for the Internet. But, you know, the end of all lawsuits that Americans can go against, all tort reform, so that you can't get any kind of a nice – you know, penalty against somebody so that you actually get paid for damages to you or whatever.
So if Dr. Frankenstein is operating you and takes out your heart, that's okay.
Okay. They want to change all the tax codes, which, you know, every time they change the tax code, somehow the wealthy and the corporations.
They only have poor people have taxes.
Yeah, that's the change they wanted. And then they wanted to weaken all regulations for pollution emissions, weaken the Clean Air Act.
You mean get rid of?
And get do away with EPA's coal ash regulations and weaken all the coal-fired emissions.
We could be just like China.
We just this week we saw the big brownout.
Right. We saw that.
You know, yeah.
Yes.
Then they also asked for just a little thing to change the way that they do everything with the debt and the debt ceiling and the way they do any of the allocating and the controls on that. So, you know, to give them more power to hold the budget hostage for future shutdowns. But so in that list, there was one mention of health care, you know.
Oh, so they didn't even think about health care. Then he didn't want to get rid of it.
20 other things.
But no health care.
There's one mention of,
I wonder why.
Of defund Obamacare.
Oh.
But all the rest, there's like 20 items here. It's just this grab bag of crap. And they didn't ever mention that once. Did you hear, hey, we want to deregulate all the power plants in your area and pour the coal runoff into your drinking water? No. Well, you hear, Obamacare, it's Nazism. Oh, my God. Hey, by the way, we want to end net neutrality. What? You know, I mean, they're so disingenuous.
I was down, you talk about South Carolina. Oh, you weren't talking about South Carolina. But you talk about the Republican Party. I go down there.
I only go
to
there
visit.
I like to walk the Appalachian.
Oh, yeah. That's I go down there. When I go down to visit my wife's parents,
mm-hmm.
they've been living there their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even drink out of the faucets. They drink bottled water.
Because they know better.
Now, why?
They live there.
If the water is not polluted, why are they drinking out of bottled water?
That is like this. Listen, here is everything you need to know about it. When fracking was brought in under the Bush administration.
You're not allowed to curse on here. Okay,
when fracking was brought in.
Yes. It's a fracking shame.
Again, it's a fracking shame. But listen, President Cheney.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right, President.
There's probably a vice in there somewhere.
Yes.
It was the only industry in America.
Yes.
Exempted from all EPA laws.
Well,
he got that written in as it was approved.
That's
sort of the war budget. What? War budget? Again, one of these things is just sweeping. You know, we must have tanks, and look at there—they're bombing our don't do anything with fracking.
Does it bother me because
didn't
vote?
So why, if your fracking is safe, if it's a good industry, why is it the only thing it's the clean water, clean air, and all the pollution laws, EPA?
Not to be dropped.
Can't touch. So,
wonder why.
You know, do people even think? I mean, do they ask?
No. If
it's a clean industry and it doesn't have any kind of a bad
clean
side effect.
Why does everybody got to wear gloves?
Why?
And boots
if
it's clean?
Exempt from all law.
Well, why does it got to wear masks?
If it's so perfect, why exempt it? You could just sit there and investigate it all day long, right?
Absolutely.
This is my last thing on the shutdown.
Yes?
David Letterman summed it up best.
David Letterman.
You remember the statesman, David Letterman.
Yes, the statesman.
Okay. He says, talking about the fact that the Republicans caved and got nothing in the end. You know, they didn't get a
deal
of all the coal ash laws. You know, okay. It says, people are saying that Republicans got nothing out of the deal. But that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
They did get something.
Mm-hmm.
They got 8 years of President Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Hey, I'll buy that. Yeah, absolutely.
Back to your point and what Malcolm Graham was saying about having no leadership and anything else. They are their own worst enemy.
That's right.
It's like you want to shoot yourself in the foot, do things like shut
down. We have faced the enemy.
And
they are this. They are us.
Yeah. Elect more people like this Yahoo saying, but now with my clean white sheet on.
Yeah, right, right.
I'll tell you why we have a voter ID
right.
law.
Here's something, but you didn't know. But I have a collage of things that these dumb people have said. This is one of them. This is it.
That is a system that has failed. After putting the bill, the American people deserve something that works or start over. I would submit that the average American looking in on this hearing this morning is going to feel like there's really nobody in charge.
I think the American people have seen this as a government slowdown, not shutdown.
People are probably going to realize they can live with a lot less government than what they thought they needed.
If that means that they're going to sit this out for a month or 2 months or however long the president wants to be arrogant and not talk to anybody, then sit it out.
They're not going to be the end of the world, honestly, that you're on nutritional assistance from the federal government. You know,
there's a really important
state of Arkansas
point
can help out. Localities can help out. Churches can help out. I believe that no one is going to starve in Arkansas because of the shutdown.
And there's one more here.
The reality is that American poor people are not malnourished. They, in fact, eat too much food.
When the safety net becomes a hammock.
My contention is that the Obama administration is encouraging parasites to come out and, you know, take as much as they can with no remorse And this is how a country declines. This is how we become a weak nation.
30%. That's how many more Americans, according to a new study, are selling food stamps for cash illegally. No, Steve, that's not legal. Nearly 48 million people receive food stamps. The program costs $80 billion a year.
The government has reached into American neighborhoods and says it's okay to be dependent.
Shouldn't there be at least some stigma?
No, this is the code. I have a few more we play later. But
right.
I mean, this is just some of the thinking, because they still need to keep the poor, the poor whites that are almost three times more than poor minorities that are on welfare and getting food stamps. They still have to keep them in the game.
Well, that's one thing Jen loves, you know, racism, fear of the outsider and the immigrant coming in and all this kind of stuff. They gin up all that just to try to keep the white people, because, you know, their economic policies just kill them.
Well, I mean,
so they have to go somewhere else. So they have to go to
racism. And before I go to my next call to write with you, I need to play this about Cruz.
You know what? When my dad was washing dishes, he was in the 47%. But he had no intention of staying there. That's the American story.
His father was in the 47%. You know, one question that has not been asked about Senor Cruz, who has a Frenchman now in the United States Senate. Why did he come here? Why did he leave Cuba? Okay, we say it's because of persecution. Then why didn't he go to the home of the brave, the United States? Why did he go to Canada? It seems to, I just haven't heard that question before.
Right.
Don't most people leave Cuba?
And flee to the U.S. 99%?
He's the only one I know that jumped right over the United States and went to Cuba. Or was he being chased once he got here?
I just want to throw this out there, just for the irony of it.
Yes.
Isn't it strange? The leaders,
yes,
the Republican Party is generating now. Let's just think back a minute. The person who ran for president,
yeah,
was Mexican.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Remember, they fled the United
States. That's right.
Because they said that they didn't have enough wives.
Mm-hmm.
They limited to one wife.
Mm-hmm.
So his family, the Romneys, went down to
Mexico.
And then he, you know, came back.
Right. Probably in Medellin.
And then you get things like, they are Americans, but the Palins of the world, who are secessionists.
Yes.
Surely. They belong to a secessionist party of
That's
Alaska.
Right.
And they fought for years to
secessionist Confederates. Right.
To leave.
Right.
And yet these people want to run America. They left and they want to leave the country and don't believe in the country and believe it should be broken up.
Right.
Just like now we got the Pauls and everybody else, all these Tea Parties to say we need to break down government. We need to end federalism.
Oh, but they want
to return to a confederacy of states.
California, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut to be excluded from the Union because they shouldn't be part of the United States.
What I think is interesting. Now, let me just say one thing about this. Last thing. Congressman Blake Farenthold of Texas.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
During that shutdown.
Yes.
And this gets to this point. Let me just say this really clear. The patriotism aspect, because, you know, they're the party of bumper stickers. They're the I've got a flag on my lapel, so that makes me more American than you party. The ones that are from Canada and Mexico and everywhere else. But this guy, during the shutdown, when he was told that vets that are disabled would not be getting checks if they did not restart the government, that everything was coming to an end. There was no more money.
Right.
He said that, you know, they need to just shut up. They just need to just take it. And his direct quote was, they need to make some sacrifices. Disabled vets need to make some sacrifices.
Yeah.
As he's like, you know,
now, who's a Farenthold?
Yeah.
Who has never been in the military?
Yeah, I don't even really care.
Never been in the military. No, he hasn't been in the military.
This is a politician a.k.a. leader of America, anybody who's in government, you know, should be a leader. He is representing our government, and he's sitting there telling people, shut up, need to make a sacrifice, you know, because you're not getting paid because we took your money from you.
That's
I mean, it's unbelievable that, that this is what patriotism is to the Republicans.
Of course. And hello, Carla. You're next. Who's this?
Hi, this is Saluda Anthony.
Hello, Saluda Anthony, who's a candidate fund for Monroe City Council. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yes, that is correct. So tell me something, Saluda Anthony. Why? Why aren't you running from Union County is the only question I have.
Okay, I am running because I'm a concerned citizen. I'm running because I want to see a change in our governing body. I'm running because I've been involved, and I've got 45 years public service, and I have a passion for public service. I have a lot to offer, and I want to represent all of the citizens.
Well, one of the questions I had, which I think you didn't hear me, or well, it was totally tongue-in-cheek, was, you know, why would you want to run for anything in Union County? I mean, that has got to be the biggest racist county in one of the biggest, I should say, because Buncombe is very, very, it's probably ahead of you on that. But you will be the first African-American Democrat. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. Well, I want to run because I think I can make a difference in Monroe and Union County. And I'm well-equipped to run, so why not?
And so what do you believe you can bring to the table?
I can bring common sense to the table. I can bring an attitude to the table.
Well, Saluda, that isn't hard to do in Union County, bringing common sense to the table. I mean, because 99% of them don't have any common sense, or else they wouldn't be there. So that, but besides the common sense, what are you strongly interested in seeing done?
I'm interested in preserving our parks and recreation. I'm interested in bringing public transportation to Monroe. I advocate for community policing. I want to strengthen the connection between the city and the communities. I believe that if one community fails, it all fails. I want to be about being among the people, talking to the people, engaging people, make them a part, an active part in government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I like the idea of having the transportation because a city does not grow unless you get on one side of the city to the other without having your own vehicle. And you're absolutely correct. Transportation is so important in any viable community that wants to be a city and grow. And if that you just get started, you will be a successful city councilwoman. And are there any other women on the city council in Monroe?
Yes, we have two women. We have Dottie Nash and we have Deborah Duncan, who just won a seat on the council.
Okay, are they Democrats or Republicans or what?
Yes.
What's that? I didn't hear that. What's that?
Democrats.
Oh, they're both Democrats?
So
you seem to be breaking up there. I think you said yes. Is that correct?
Yes, they're both Democrats.
Okay. Have you spoken with them? Are they going to help you get involved, or how's that going to work?
Spoken to them, and they are going to take an active part in the campaign as far as canvassing and, you know, using their sphere of influence to help get people out to the polls.
How many do you have a website or a phone number that people can call in and give you some assistance?
Exactly. My website is SirLudaAnthony.com. My phone number is 7489085 12.
Okay. And Where are you going to be this weekend campaigning?
I will be campaigning on Saturday the 26th in the old historic Monroe neighborhood, starting at 1 o'clock with a walk and talk. And on mm-hmm. Sunday, October 27th, I will be walking and talking in the Sutton Park neighborhood, starting at 2 o'clock.
Okay. So, yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to ask you to get out among the citizens, talk to the citizens, and, you know, to see what their stand is, what they think about. A lot of people here are apathetic and have lost interest, and, you know, we really need to then get them engaged, make them a part, because I believe in grassroots politics, and I'm one that thinks that people are the most important resource, and government is for, of, and about people.
Right. How many African-Americans are in your voting area?
Registered is over 9,000.
9,000. And what percentage of that, of the vote, is it?
We make up over about 13% of the vote.
Oh, that's a good percentage. Who is the, I guess you only have one Democratic Party that covers all of that area, and that's the one that shouldn't be mentioned, but how are you working with them?
Well, I am a registered Democrat. This particular race is bipartisan, so, you know, we engage in independent.
Oh, this is nonpartisan? In Monroe, the election, well, which races are partisan?
The partisan races are, you know, state elections, but all local elections here are bipartisan.
Are bipartisan or nonpartisan? Did you say bipartisan or nonpartisan?
Partisan races.
Yeah, you seem to be breaking up. Did you say partisan races?
They are nonpartisan races.
Oh, they're nonpartisan. Okay, because, but, you know, that's sort of a, I don't know how long you've been in politics, but I've never seen a nonpartisan race that wasn't partisan.
Well, of course you're going to have, there's no race anywhere. It's not, but you don't have to
That's
be
right.
a party to run.
You have to do what?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm out of range. I'm sort of breaking up. I can't hear you. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. The thing that I hope... if you can give us your phone number again, where some people who can call in and might want to ask you questions and find out how to help you, or where you're going to be over the next 10 days or so, could you give us that phone number again?
704-890-8512.
And the email?
Is salutaanthony1307. @gmail.com.
Okay, and that's Saluda, S-U-R, right? L-U-T-A.
Right.
Anthony, A-N-T-H-O-N-Y. Saluda Anthony, one word, @gmail.com?
No, Saluda Anthony 1307 @gmail.com.
Okay, Saluda Anthony 1307 @gmail.com. Okay. And so what is the one thing that you want to get done? Mostly, you gave us a list of about five or six things. I'm more inclined to try to get the money for transportation, but which one of yours line of things that you'd like to get done is most important to you?
That's public transportation is most important.
Okay. Very good.
Public transportation.
Public transportation to bring people closer together. And also, it enables people to get better jobs when they can go across the city to another location. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we have to go?
I just encourage everyone to come out and vote, make your voice heard. This was a very tight race. I'm involved in a runoff now. And it just emphasizes the point that every vote does count.
How many seats before you go? How many seats or how many people are vying for your one seat?
It's two of us vying for one seat.
Okay, very good. All right.
Incumbent.
Well, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm running against the incumbent.
Oh, you're running against the incumbent. Okay. And, well, Saluda, I wish you all the best. And if you want to come on next Friday, one last shot at it, you're welcome to do it.
Yeah. And
is that okay?
You.
No problem. I thank you. Saluda Anthony. People, go out and vote for her. She's going to be a first in Monroe County.
Making history.
Making history. I thank you, Saluda.
You know what? I think it's sad that, A, you know, we're having to make history in 2013. But anyway, I think it's sad that there are some people so afraid of change, no matter what that change is, whether it's, you know,
they're not afraid of change.
Yeah.
They don't want to change.
Well, why not? I just don't get it. I mean, how
because
boring is
they're
life?
Used.
Don't ever want to have anything.
But
new.
That's right. Their life is boring.
Ugh.
They get up. They feed the hogs.
Mm-hmm.
They feed the chickens. They have bacon and eggs when they come back in. They have a cold beer at 12 o'clock. They go out to the field again.
They
come back
right.
in. They have a ham and cheese.
They don't have a cold beer. But,
well,
you know, look, I got a history degree. I love history. I study history. I teach history. The thing you learn
history,
from history.
That's for socialists.
No. The thing you learn
from history. Or a communist then.
Is that it's full of profound change.
No.
The study of history.
No, not your history. It's your history. Not my history.
Time.
There is no change. My history, there is no change. Everything's the same.
Always has been.
Always has been. Always will be. Forever and ever. Amen. Hey, I'm only telling you. Now, I want to get to the thing about Ted Cruz. I played a little thing about him.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz compares conservative defund Obamacare skeptics
so there's any of the GOP
to
dare?
Nazi appeasers.
Nazi appeasers. So if they dared not to go along with the shutdown
yes.
and everything, they're Nazi appeasers.
Yes. Ted Cruz said he whipped out the analogy that there are key differences between the Affordable Care Act and Hitler. But you know, here it is. On Wednesday morning, the Anti-Defamation League weighed in.
Well,
I wish Senator Cruz would have used another comparison.
Nice statement after.
But his statement does not trivialize the Holocaust. The Holocaust.
Well, again.
I mean, come on. What are you talking about? Give me a break.
He's such a tool, man. I don't even understand.
Oh. What you see? But you see. I got some of this stuff when I was away in Mexico for 2 weeks over huge margaritas.
So you're admitting that you're a foreigner.
Yes.
And that you were in.
I wish I was still back down there.
She's in an un-American place.
That's right.
Getting un-American ideas.
And you know what? No one talked one time about Ted Cruz. Except we met some great people. Two great people, as a matter of fact. Name is Bill and Connie Houston from Iowa.
Ah.
They've gone down there a few times. They have a timeshare down there, and we met them. Penny, well, my wife met them. Then we got to talking. We became good friends. We were talking. We went out to dinner. They took us out to breakfast day before we left, and we got to talk about it. I'm gonna talk about that later. But
okay.
he was an Air Force, been in the Air Force. I think a career in the Air Force. And Connie has a daughter in the Air Force now, and they also have a son, I believe. But we got to talking a bunch of stuff like that. He says, you know, he just can't understand it. What the hell these people are doing? They are completely out of touch.
I don't think anybody knows what they're doing. I don't think they know what they're doing.
And, he said, now, he says, I forgot what he said. It was I-1, I-50. I don't know, one of them goes right through there. But there is no train you can go through there to get to them, where they live. They live in a small town. So anyway, I won't get back to that. But
look, they so
if Connie and Bill are listening, hello, Connie and Bill, and I haven't broken open any of the tequila yet.
Yeah.
This weekend is a coming. And I saw I got some of this Swaza here, a whole quart. I have to make the margaritas out of it. I'm not going to make the margaritas out of this other stuff. Anyway.
So can we talk about this poison atmosphere that leads Dick Durbin and...
We're going to get to that. I want to talk about escape of the FEMA camps that you're going to be put in when the black helicopters come, because they're coming, and you're going to knock at the door. Mm-hmm. If they're nice. Otherwise, they're going to kick the door in.
Yeah, I think they're just going to kick the door
in. And they say, everybody out! And you will not know who they are because they'll be wearing these black masks, black suits, jump boots with M16s in their hand, and they're going to say, get dressed.
Except for,
you can't take nothing with you but a toothbrush.
Except for on their armband, there's going to be a big O.
No, it's going to say FEMA.
No, it's going to be an O for Obama.
Oh, well, that's, yeah. And then below that, it's going to have FEMA. And it's going to... And then you'll be given a paper, and you'll be going to either FEMA camp number one or number two. But have no fear. The Republican right has a book out now, How to Escape the FEMA Camp. And all you have to do is send
$37.
Oh, that's all?
That's all.
That's right. And you can do whatever you want. You can call it debt ceiling profiteering with the federal government just a few days away from defaulting, and this was just before, but it's $500 million a year preparedness industry.
$500 million.
That's right.
So they're making $500 million
right.
off of
right.
shutting things down.
Shutting down, right.
Okay.
And he says, there are three hidden signs that Obama is about to throw you into a FEMA camp.
Ah, for the hidden signs.
Right. They're on...
One, he's in office.
This,
that's number one.
This secret character. But once you know the three signs, you're already one step ahead, and you're in control.
And that's the thing. You're in control.
You can beat them at their own game. Just click here, and before it's too late.
Yeah. And I like this quote. You can beat them at your own game.
That's right.
Speaking of 12 years a slave, much like an overmaster, they will teach you how to just come with the bullet.
I had to tell you that. Instead, you said, what steps are those? The informational infomercial asks. Instead, it devolves into a rant about the Federal Reserve, claiming it's part of the plot by greedy bankers to rig the entire U.S. economy in their favor, luring the country into a gargantuan debt it can never repay. Worst, massive Ponzi scheme. Where have we heard from that? Did we hear that before? Oh, it's about Social Security. No, it's about Medicare. Oh, no, it was about Obamacare now. But never fear. There's a simple yet stunning, powerful method that will have intruders running away from their home like scared little girls. And you can learn it from the comfort of your own home, all for a mere $37 among the skills you will glean through
the Patriot
Survival Plan video.
Now, here's my favorite part. This is a crisis because, you know, this jumped out at me. I saw the word history, so I thought they might have a point, you know. But no, a crisis unlike any other in history.
Yes.
A catastrophe.
Yes.
That will overshadow Katrina. Overshadow Pearl Harbor.
Oh.
9/11. The Great Depression.
I need a drink.
And even the Civil War.
Oh, my God. God, I got to get this 30. Where can I find it?
I love how they wove in, you know, the Confederacy.
Oh, yeah. You know,
you got to get it in there somehow. And I like how that fits in somehow. So Obama is going to come. Now, wait. Is he going to finally end the camps where he's going to store the civilians of America? Is he going to finally use those trailers that Bush left, the millions?
That are rotting?
That they never used.
That are rotting? The rotting trailers?
Yeah.
They're more full?
Is that where the camps
Yes, that's where the camps are going to be.
Okay.
That's where they're going to be.
Finally, see, all the pieces are coming together.
Absolutely.
But if you call down.
He didn't do those trailers. Those were the trailers by George Bush. So George Bush was involved in this?
You just think it was George Bush. It's always Obama.
So Obama was thinking this when he was born in Kenya.
It's kind of like...
Oh, no, when his father was born in Kenya, he was thinking about this.
It's kind of like that scene, you know, where Jack goes down to the ballroom and hears some music, you know, and it's swinging, and he walks in, and he goes, man, I'd sell my soul for a drink in this place. And then, out of nowhere, the bartender goes, hey, Jack, what are you want? I got that drink right here. And how you doing, man? All this stuff. And they get talking, and he goes, I don't understand.
You want a sign right here?
Didn't you kill everybody here? Aren't you the caretaker at the Overlook Hotel? And the guy goes, no, Mr. Torrance, you're the caretaker. You've always been
the caretaker.
Okay, that's how it is. You've always been the dictator, Obama. You may have thought it was Papa Bush.
It's so when Obama's father was born in Kenya years ago, Obama was already thinking that because he was a seed inside his father's loins and his mother's.
Hey, you know what?
Whatever.
We're going to have to start.
Yes.
Sending our special forces, our CIA, our NSA, all of our specialists to Kenya.
Yes.
To get proper training, because apparently the Kenyans
know how it works
better than the Chinese.
Absolutely,
they were better than all of those communists.
Right,
because you know the whole Soviet Union spent 70 years trying to defeat us, and they failed. But the Kenyans,
they knew how to be a Manchurian candidate.
They were so brilliant. They not only did they did a generation ahead of time. They had this guy come over here, rape probably a white woman in Kansas, and implant a terrorist an entire lifetime ahead and have him smuggled in so that he was, because the birth certificate was never done, he was born in Kenya, that's what they say, but somehow smuggled in so that he became a naturalized citizen of the United States so that the Manchurian takeover dictatorship could begin. And they are brilliant. The Kenyans did this. They brought America down. And now the white people are being shuffled through the gates of the FEMA camp into bondage. My God. They are the masters of the world.
I have one question, though. Just one question. Our French senator, Mr. Cruz.
You have mistaken that. He's not French.
Okay.
He's Canadian French.
Oh.
That's a whole new Quebec kind of level.
Okay, but
see, that's not even a full French.
Okay,
a,
so
full French.
He was born in...
To use a French term.
He was born in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Like a...
But he could run for president, but our president who's born in Kenya couldn't.
Right, because he's black. See, Mike.
Oh, but wait a minute. I thought it was because your mother had to be born here.
The essential fact is you have to be a white person.
Oh, I missed that whole thing.
Right, right. See, and that was the thing, like.
I missed it.
Look,
but they never said that.
But, see, this explains it all.
They never said that.
I don't understand. See, that was the dichotomy in the last election. Remember, they were trying to say, we need to build a fence and keep out and self-deport the ones that already got over the fence.
Right.
All of those dark-skinned, dirty, nasty Mexicans.
Okay,
and other people
All right.
We need to get them off our lawns, you know, rip
Both their loins?
Loins.
Oh, loins. Okay.
Yeah. They're
loins too.
They're sweating loins off of our lawn. But we need to rip our lawnmowers from their grass,
right,
throw them over the fence, and build it higher.
Well, who's going to do the lawn?
No, because
I'm not doing it.
The only kind of nasty, dirty immigrant we need here are the white ones.
Or French ones.
Romney.
Or French ones.
No, Romney at that time was the Mexican immigrant.
Right.
But see, he had the all-American whiteness.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with Cruz. Cruz kind of, you know, he's a little dusky, but he's different than a Kenyan terrorist.
Yes.
There's just a difference. It doesn't matter where you're born.
He's a French terrorist.
You look Caucasian. It's okay. That's the difference. That's the
well, he looks weird to me.
Ingredient. Yeah, it looks like a freaking. You know, did you see the. Yeah, actually.
It looks like.
They showed the thing. You remember who Romney ran with? So let's.
I remember. Oh, yeah. He ran with.
Election.
Yeah, he ran with. He ran with Eddie Munster.
Yeah.
That's right.
So he was Herman.
Right. He had Eddie.
Eddie was his partner.
Right.
Now they're running Uncle Fester. Have you seen that online? They put the two pictures together, and it's unbelievable.
Yes, he does. He looks like Uncle Fester.
So now we've got Uncle Fester, and much like...
So the Munsters are taking over?
Well, much like a severe infection, it is now festering. And America needs help. I think, you know what we need? A national health care system to take care
of the festering problem.
Festering boil on America's.
Well, they have one in Massachusetts.
You know,
they have one in Massachusetts.
With America. And here's the thing that's wrong with America. Just like you can spend $37 to get your
How
to Escape from Obama's FEMA Camp
right.
book. The problem with America is that the festering boil, you shut down America and laughed all the way to the bank, made over $500,000 the first week he shut down the government from his illustrious donors.
Mm.
And the money had just clouds of coal ash falling off of it. But $500,000 for doing that. And that's the problem right there with America. That is why it will continue to happen.
Wish I had some of that $500,000.
Oh, anybody would. So, but this is how this is why, you know, you wonder about this. These guys are making money off of the fear-mongering, the destruction of our country, the breaking down of our country. And this is self-fulfilling prophecy. Just like, you know, when they took money out of education years ago.
Yes.
And started the whole defunding of it. So it starts collapsing. And then they say, well, we need alternatives to it. Then obviously it's not what we need private schools. We need religious schools. We need business schools. Let's start a whole bunch of that. Let's divert more of the money into it. And then let's start testing these failures that are left. And if they don't live up to every possible standard, then we're going to defund them even more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a death spiral because you start saying, maybe the school's not working because you took the money out of it. Maybe the teachers aren't able to teach because you quit paying them. And maybe the students can't learn because they live in crushing poverty and go to schools that are overcrowded and sit in classrooms with the roofs falling in on them with rainwater. And then they go, nah, not that, obviously. So,
well, I mean...
it's an industry. They've become an industry of failure. That's the way they make money. And when you're huddled on the floor crying in your room, they say, for $37, I'll teach you how to escape the crushing fear and poverty of the camp that we're sending you to. You know,
The FEMA camp it's not really like that. I mean, you'll love some of the FEMA camps.
Mm-hmm.
They're so warm and close. Three people in a bed. I mean, you know, it's like... Well, I don't know. It's something that you just want to belong to.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I mean, I don't see any difference. I just don't see why people are so aggressive against
camps. If somebody was so evil, some tyrant was so despicable, they're going to put you in a camp.
Yeah.
Lock your family away.
Lock me in a camp. Okay.
Given that circumstance, then, now, can we talk about Sessions condemn and why they can't even stand to look at a dictator like
oh,
that?
Oh, yes. Why don't we just...
Because, you know, that makes sense. Then, in that light,
yes.
If you've got somebody so evil that they're locking your grandmother in a FEMA camp.
Locking grandma in a FEMA camp.
I mean, that's
camp.
Because they haven't quite gotten to the death panel yet on the new Affordable Care Act.
I know.
But well, grandmother, while still alive, will live in misery in the FEMA camp.
Well, speaking about that, yes, let's talk about this. Let's get to Dick Durbin, what he found out. Yes, let's go to Dick Durbin.
Well, so this thing, and y'all probably heard this in the news, so this thing came out. Dick Durbin and Pete Sessions, they came out this week that during the shutdown, during the whole debate over whether or not we should fund healthcare in America, which is why just even have this debate is just ridiculous. You know, it's the fact that they even have to fight over should Americans have healthcare? Is this a question? So anyway, during that whole thing, behind the scenes, apparently, Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin, he alleged that the House Republican leadership told President Barack Obama that they can, this is the quote, I cannot even stand to look at you, unquote. Now, this is a House leader addressing the President of the United States. And you wonder why there's dysfunction in Washington.
Well, what happened was that they had a meeting, a private session with Republican representatives and House members and Democratic House members, and no, I think it was just Democratic House members at the time. No, there had to be it was Republican and Democratic House members, and we don't really know why it got to that point, but Dick, too, because I live in Texas, Sessions came out and told the president, some way, shape, or form, I can't even stand to look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this isn't something that seems to be so rash. I mean, because we have heard these things before. And I'm going to play you a little bit about what we've heard before, mm-hmm. about how thoroughly, they have completely disrespected this president.
And Pete Sessions denies the remark, but you've been working on this story all day. What are you hearing and what really happened?
So we don't know exactly what happened in the meeting. Here's what we do know. A White House official, Rob Neighbors, who was in the meeting, after that meeting, went to the Senate and told a group of Senate leaders, which included Durbin and Harry Reid, that Pete Sessions had this incredibly disrespectful exchange with the president. The president had handled it gracefully, et cetera, et cetera. That's the story he told, and he quoted him as saying, I can't even stand to look at you. Reid, immediately after that, went to a Senate Democratic caucus and retold that story to all of the senators there, and that's according to two of the senators who were in the room and told us that. So what's in dispute at this point is what actually was said in the room that caused Neighbors to tell Reid and Durbin that something happened. There are two options. I mean, either Neighbors made something up out of whole cloth and nothing at all happened in that meeting that was remotely offensive or insulting. Or there was some type of insulting exchange that was then blown up by from Neighbors to Reid, and then blown up again from Reid to the senators, and then blown up again by Durbin to Facebook. That seems more likely to me. But the White House is now clamming up. I think they're kind of embarrassed about the way that this rolled out. You know, they won the shutdown battle. I think that they'd rather just kind of move on from here. They don't want to kind of kick them while they're down. So at this point, we don't know. I guess we'll have to wait for Bob Woodward's kind of tell-all book 2 years from now.
Well,
the story is that we have had people who have told this president so many times that he was completely outrageous, from the Joe Wilson, you lie, to the to that clown in Arizona, the governor, wagging her finger in his face when he got off Air Force One, to the people just calling him straight out liars.
Yeah, and again, questioning that he's even American, that he, you know,
he wasn't born here.
His entire identity is, you know, questionable. He isn't even an American.
Of course not. He's not even an American.
Disrespectful they are. So, yeah. We also get these. It's no surprise that you get these guys saying, "I can't even stand to look at it." You know, when in the atmosphere of buying my $37 book on how to escape this camp that he's going to put you in. I mean, this is the level of discourse that these so-called politicians are in. It's just amazing.
Well, the thing is that we have and I'll give you some more little glimpses here. Let me pull this clip up.
Barack Obama does not have his hand on the Bible.
Is he really president?
I still don't know what the man is
going
to do. He's not going to succeed. Socialism has failed.
Deep-seated hatred for white people.
In Obama's America, the white kids now get beat up with the black kids cheering, yay, right on.
Apologizing to these Muslim terrorists, some would say, instead of actually taking them on head-on.
Amnesty for legal aliens via a Hitler-like executive order. He's religiously an enigma. Radical, left-wing Marxist, socialism, fascism, whatever you want to call it.
If you are going to be the president of the United States, you have to be born in this country.
People are allowed to ask why President Obama won't produce his birth certificate. It's not a traditional America anymore. And there are 50% of the voting public who want stuff. They want things. And who is going to give them things? President Obama.
Barack Obama is a socialist. He believes in socialism, in redistributing wealth, in confiscating hard-earned dollars.
Now, so half these people who you just heard don't even know the difference between socialism and communism or fascism.
That's one of my favorite quotes.
But they have never. They don't know.
Is Rush blathering on, saying he's a socialist, communist,
Marxist,
fascist, all at once.
Right.
So he's just,
socialist, communist, fascist, Marxist. Kenyon.
They don't.
And then they throw Kenyon as icing on the top.
Yeah, they're just mutually exclusive. You can't have one definition with the other. I mean, you cannot be a communist.
Where I'm at the point now, we need to do a show.
Oh, I know.
Just for that. Let's do that next week.
Well, we need to. Because
we need to read all the definitions and give all the people who represent these.
Let me just say, again to this guy.
Yes,
this
yes.
Pays into, so we're going to talk in a second about this Mississippi Republican, Chris McDaniel, who, you know, made the news.
Oh, God.
He's running for
president. Mississippi again.
Look, this is the guy.
Can't they stay out of this?
Well, listen to this. This is how extreme. These same people, and we're going to talk exactly. I'm fixing to tell you why I'm talking about this with this Marxist comment. But this guy is a Tea Party-backed, Club for Growth-backed, Senate Conservatives Fund-backed, ultra-extremist Tea Party kind of guy who is challenging Senator Thad Cochran of Mississippi for being too liberal. Okay, now, when you're challenging Mississippi icon like Thad Cochran, you know, you've got, hey, we are far afield. Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, man, I can't even see the white of your sheet anymore. That's how far down the rabbit hole we are. Yeah. So. Well, listen to this. This guy, and we'll talk about it in depth, but let me just set the stage here. So here is a picture of him, you know, in front of the big Confederate flag. Okay. But he appeared, he took the stage with a quote-unquote historian in Mississippi, right, who is one of these.
Yeah, that's
well.
Is that an oxymoron or what?
No. So he took the stage with this guy who's a, you know, let's say, this isn't my thing. So he took the stage with this guy who, now this is, you know, supposedly a professional guy and all down there, but he's one of these, you know, neo-Confederate, racist, you know, kind of guys. And his contention is, one of those normal kind of Tea Parties. Now, but his contention is, I just wanted to point out, this is not the, we haven't even gotten to the Mississippi Republican guy, but this other guy that he introduced him, you know, his good bud, he claims that Lincoln, as in Abraham Lincoln, was, now listen, for those who don't understand, I told you I like history, so this stuff just intrigues me. Here is a Republican-esque challenger claiming to be, you know, the true conservative. He is challenging the existing senator of his party, the guy who has been a proven leader, been there for decades. So he's challenging this guy.
You're a racist who's been there for decades.
Yeah, he's been there for years, but he's challenging that. And he's standing with the guy who claims that Abraham Lincoln, for people who don't know, is the founding president of the Republicans. That's the Republican Party. That's how they came in.
Okay.
They were the rebellious left-wing crazy party that came in because they were sick of slavery in America. That tidal wave of reform coming in to end slavery and give rights to black people is what Lincoln ran on, and the Reform Party he represented was the Republican Party.
Right.
This guy says that Abraham Lincoln,
yes,
was a dirty, nasty, left-wing Marxist. That's what he calls him, a Marxist.
Oh, he was a vampire slayer then.
Now, let's put this in context for a minute.
Yes.
Lincoln was elected to office and then went about abolishing slavery, which sparked something called the Civil War.
Oh, I remember that.
Right. Well, that's like their go-to favorite thing down there. But anyway, that occurred in the 1860s, right?
Well, so they say.
Okay.
I wasn't around.
Well, there's a gentleman that was, there's a gentleman that was born in the 1800s, 1818, as a matter of fact, called Karl Heinrich Marx. Now, Karl Marx was he was a thinker. Okay, he's what they call a philosopher. So Marx and nice stuff you got going.
That's why I gave you the
napkin. Man, you're a special kind of guy.
I gave you the napkin.
I didn't realize what was going on. So,
yes,
Karl and his little buddy Engels.
Engels.
Engels and Karl, they talked a lot, and they came up with some ideas. And they had some ideas about how government and politics should work, and if government should be, you know, beholden to the people, and they should distribute things in a better way than a feudal system, or the, at that time, new system which had taken over feudalism, which was industrialism. Industrialism is foundation capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But industrialism there was where all the factories and everything were everywhere in every city, and they owned you, and you went and worked for slave wages. Basically.
Oh, so like,
a lot of slave.
That was the Major League Baseball back in the 40s and 50s.
That's
okay.
Where you,
30s, 40s, 50s.
You know,
right.
Women, children, everybody else to go work 20 hours in a day, you know. And they said there's got to be another way. We went from feudalism, where the lord sits in his castle and then tells you, go work for the field and everything else, give me everything you get, and then if you don't, my knight's going to come chop your head off. Oh, okay, thanks for the grain. To go work in the factory all night, I'll make my product, I'm going to sell it for $1 million overseas, and you can show up tomorrow, you know, and say, wait a minute, where do I get out of this? And so they said, you know, there's got to be a better way, and the better way they came up with was the equal distribution of and products to everyone. Everybody works, everybody gets everything. It's fair. Everybody gets the same amount all across the board.
So even the rich people? Even the rich people?
Which they would call socialism because it's society, you know, socialism. Later became, in our century, we call it often Marxism for short, because Karl Marx and Engels came up with the idea. But here's the thing I want to point out. One, you know, it didn't exist prior to that. They were contemporaries across the world. Mm-hmm. They lived on different continents. Lincoln didn't grow up reading no Marx.
Oh, he didn't?
You know, there was no Marx to read.
Oh.
And this stuff wasn't even translated and brought over
so
until
Marx learned it from Lincoln.
After someone in a theater put a bullet in Lincoln's
right.
head. It was later translated into English, brought over here and all that. And that's why it flowered over here in the early 19th century, rather, I mean early 20th century, when it started spreading through Europe. And it became a threat after World War II to all Western doctors. But after World War I, it started flowering for the first time because people said, hey, this is a pretty good theory. Let's read it now that we've got translations of it. But I remind people, this is not 1860s when that happened. That's no 1920s and 30s mm-hmm. and stuff. So, again, they're talking out their flaming posteriors. And I don't understand where they even come up with this stuff. So now this is a guy who's so radical that he says his own founding president, who is, I remind people, the most popular president outside of, like, George Washington and everybody knows, Abraham Lincoln. He's one of the most famous people in all of history. Everybody around the world.
He has a memorial.
Yeah, he even has a memorial right there by the White House. You don't see a memorial to, like, you know, the KKK. You don't see one to, you know, Karl Marx.
Or who's that
but
guy from the father of the Confederacy? Davis?
Yeah.
I don't see one for him either.
He's got a little house.
Oh, you got a little house.
On the coast of Mississippi on a little plantation called Beauvoir. It looks pretty nice.
Why has it got to be named French? Why is it French?
Because,
I thought we were too friendly with French.
Don't mix them up. Don't confuse them.
I mean, it's French. What's
yeah.
it French?
Again, I probably hated the French.
No, I mean, I don't understand this. The French, didn't we get rid of French fries or something called Freedom Fries?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't understand that.
Right, so Freedom Mansion down in Mississippi. That's the thing. Anyway, we've got this guy who's sitting with a historian calling Lincoln a Marxist.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so stupid on his face. It didn't even exist. And then, to begin with, he's the most popular, most successful, and founding president of the Republican Party. And yet, this guy is a Marxist seven. So this is the level we're at. We're at a level where these regressives hate the Republicans. Normal Republicans are so anathema to them that they are Nazi sympathizers. You know, we heard that a minute ago. And then even hard-line Republicans like Senator Thad Cochran of Mississippi is so saying that these guys are saying, we've got to elect somebody else because they're like Marxists.
What?
When let me promise you, when you get the point that Republicans and Mississippi Republicans are at the level of Marxists, you run. Run for your lives, people.
Kids,
so,
you can't even say Thad Cochran in the same tone with Marxists. I mean,
that's my favorite line out of this whole thing. If you can read any of this, you want to. But my favorite line was the opening line because I love pithy comments. But someone said, "This Mississippian rather, Chris McDaniel is taking the GOP Civil War to a new level." I mean, I love it. GOP Civil War,
a world war.
Woo!
He's taking it to. Must be.
So, okay, you want to talk to me about this, what he actually did and said and where he showed up and, you know.
He is, well.
A little bit of Southern Heritage Conference. What's that?
A Southern Heritage Conference.
Well, look.
This is the thing.
This is what they said on their own, I just want to say, on their own little invitation in their website. It's for politically incorrect folks. And that you are encouraged to dress in your Confederate uniforms and your antebellum ball gowns.
Antebellum ball
gowns.
Well, didn't Westlake just do this? Who's the cook?
The exception to the rule is you can bring your wee kilties.
Wee what?
Wee kilties.
Wee kilties? What's that?
That's a cutie little phrase we have for all them Scotsmen that wear.
Oh, we guilty.
Our white humor. Oh my.
Oh, we guilty.
And I guess we guilty because actual Scotsmen. Let me remind you. The Celts are some badass.
We are saying Sean Connery down there to see them.
Celts were badass.
That's right.
Barbarians. Guess what? They were so badass that even the Roman Empire didn't take Scotland.
That's right.
They quit. And then
That's
they
right.
built the wall.
Right.
Hadrian's
and
wall.
It was so cold, and they were still wearing dresses.
Right. Now, look, these guys in the Arctic standing around wearing dresses, right? Guess what? They had to be.
It's a kilt.
Kilts have to be knee-length. I remind people for a reason. Now, these Mississippi Yahoos,
they,
with their little Lincoln Marxist books they were walking around with,
they wear
they
like briefs.
We
could be like briefs.
There's nothing knee-length there. That's all I got to say.
This is so freaking funny. Well, hey.
Hey, it's funny in a horrible way, man.
Hey, listen.
The truth is, these guys are trying to get in office.
What do you think about Ted Cruz's Nigerian email scammers joke?
Oh, I haven't. Let me leave the sweaty plantation of Mississippi and drive over to Texas.
Right.
Ted Cruz,
the other day, on the 21st, he said he recently joked comparing those running for Obamacare website to Nigerian email scammers.
They just can't help themselves.
They just
love it. Look, they have to throw a black illusion in there somehow. Some way we've got to connect it.
But we're not racist. Now, did you, this guy from Buncombe County, when he was asked by the guy from The Daily Show.
Let me just say Cruz's actual statement. Have you all noticed, you know, the Nigerian email scammers that go around? Cruz asked the crowd in Houston. They've been a lot less active lately. You ready for it? Because they've all been hired to run the Obamacare website.
And now he has all the Nigerians in Texas up in arms.
No, you mean holding their spears.
Oh,
up there.
Oh, I mean spears. Yes, you're right. But here's let me play this for you one more time. This Don Yelton, this moron from Buncombe County.
Right here in Buncombe County, there's always one or two that voted twice a year. They don't know
one or 2 million people?
No, one or two people.
And that's one or two out of how many?
That's just one or two out of 60,000.
So statistically, there is enough voter fraud to sway zero elections.
That's not the point.
Hey, you know what the problem is in their eyes, Mike? It's not that the Nigerian scammers have been hired by the Obama administration to fix the dictatorial FEMA camp healthcare site, but the fact that a hero, a absolute hero like a Canadian Frenchman Ted Cruz is, that a hero like that for pointing this truth out to Americans will get criticized by Nigerians living in America. That's the problem. Nigerians living in Houston? What?
Yes.
That's what's wrong with America.
This is the problem. And
they have infiltrated
that,
their neighborhood.
That's right. So he wants them to get out.
Oh, my God.
He knows they're not going to vote for him. Well,
man, can we finish that wall already?
Around Nigeria?
We need one around the country.
I wanted to play the other scam part of this Don Yelton where he says, he looks at him and he says, you know, some of my friends are black. Well, let me play it for those who didn't just tune in. We just played
the bottom line is the law is not racist.
Of course the law is not racist, and you are not racist.
Well, I've been called a bigot before. Let me tell you something. You don't look like me, but I think I've treated you the same as I would anybody else.
Right.
Matter of fact, one of my best friends is black.
One of my best friends is black.
Yes.
And there's more.
When I was a young man, You didn't call a black a black. You called him a Negro. I had a picture one time of Obama sitting on his stump as a witch doctor, and I posted that on Facebook. Basically, I was making fun of my white half of Obama, not the black half. And now you have a black person using the term this, that, and it's okay for them to do it.
You know that we can hear you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you know that. You know that we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Then I found out the real reason for the law.
The law is going to kick the Democrats in the butt.
Wow! An executive GOP committee member just admitted that this law isn't designed to hurt black people, it's designed to hurt Democrats.
If it hurts a bunch of college kids that's too lazy to get up off their bohunkus and go get a photo ID, so be it.
Right, right.
If it hurts the whites, so be it. If it hurts a bunch of lazy blacks that wants the government to give them everything, so be it.
And it just so happens that a lot of those people vote Democrat.
Gee.
I mean, you know, see, here's the thing. Everybody says, well, you know, they just so stupid they don't know any better. No! That is not true. They don't give a damn.
That's right.
That's the problem. They don't give a damn.
I'll tell you how much they don't give a damn. Ted Cruz's wife, Heidi Cruz.
Oh, wait, we didn't get to that yet. You're right.
This is a... After he, you know, comes out with his statement on the Nigerian healthcare workers in the White House, she says, quote, Ted is very much a visionary. He's very strategic, and he's very practical, and he does what needs to be done, not what everybody wants him to do. So, see, that's a crazy like a fox statement right there. He'll say and do whatever it takes.
That's right.
You know. He's telling it like it is.
Well, the other thing why he don't want health care is because he gets health care from his wife, who works for Goldman Sachs. He has not a platinum health care plan, $20,000 a year. His health care plan costs with Goldman Sachs that they pay for him.
Right.
That means the U.S. people, taxpayers, are paying that because Goldman Sachs deducts it as a tax-deductible item.
Mm-hmm.
That means we're paying for him, okay?
Yeah.
But that's not major problem.
You mean like a freeloader?
Freeloader. He's getting welfare.
Yes.
But here's the real thing. He has a $20,000 a year health care plan that him or his wife do not pay for, that the taxpayers of these United States pay for, and in Texas, his state, full-time minimum wage worker, makes $15.80 a year, $15,080 a year. They don't even make enough to pay for his health insurance in 1 year.
Yeah, what's the problem? That's America, baby.
That's right.
That's why
That's why everybody should go to Yale and Harvard.
Yeah, but that's why one of the things that cracks me up the most is that they were pointing out, you know, inconsistencies. Like, for instance, that there's 300 people in America. 300.
Only 300?
300 people in America who have as much money as the lower, about 50 or 60% of Americans. Okay? And, for instance, in those that class of people, six of the Waltons from Sam Walton fame, as in Walmart.
Not the Waltons from TV.
Oh,
okay, all right.
But his children.
Yeah.
Have more money than about 30% of all Americans. Now, is there a problem with that? Or is that just, that's America. That's the way it should be. Well, what you complaining about, boy? Yeah, I don't understand how. Look, there's a very neat little stat I was pointing out. It's been a while. I showed it to you a while back, but it's just an easy stat. Somewhere in the last 30, 40 years, sounds like Papa Reagan. Somewhere along the line, though, in this country they flipped things. Used to, taxes paid for everything. As in, taxes on businesses, taxes on cars.
90%. When Kennedy came in.
Yeah, real tax on commerce in America, you know.
Didn't bother anybody. Look, was painted.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Because they wrote it off.
That was because it was the greatest generation, and they talk about that because we were number one in the world. How did we get there? Because we paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a simple thing. When you make money, you know, you gave a little bit of it back. Even in Reagan, when he went in, tax rate on a corporation was around 30%, right? You know what it is today?
That's not 25.
Literally, no. You know what it is?
No,
you don't even know. 9%
With everything deductible, right. Okay.
Now, that's how much they contribute to the economy. They used to pay 30% on tax, now they pay 9%.
Well, Romney contributed 15%.
Now, listen, there is a problem, and it's directly related to, why we're going bankrupt. But, there's a problem when they flipped things over, and now companies pay nothing, people pay everything, and then they say people are freeloaders. But not all
companies
of deductions and all this. You know, just like you said there's this guy. We're paying, they're claiming deduction on Ted Cruz, you know, paying all his. It's that way across the board. They've got so many loopholes, so many everything, that most companies don't pay any tax to begin with. But even if they do, if they get it all tax free. They get
nothing for 2 years.
So it's broken. It's wrong. It's flipped on its head.
Well,
and we could have anything we wanted. I mean, we literally put people on the moon with the old horrible repressive tax system we used to have. Nowadays, you know, we can't even keep the lights on in America.
So it comes, this insurance fraud that he gets is basically no cost to them. It all goes to the taxpayers and reflects a personal decision about worlds, about what works best for our family.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? Now, did you hear about the other knucklehead? The other knucklehead? Sheldon Adelson? You know him.
Oh.
Ah.
Yeah.
Give me your money.
Talking about this, 300 people. This is one of the billionaires of America. Here he is.
That's him. He said
let me just stress this here. You know what? Why he's a billionaire?
Because the money's all offshore.
No,
well, practically most of
it. Casino.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real valid family-oriented operation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yes.
Well, he was at Yeshiva University in New York, and he was doing an interview.
That sounds foreign, man.
Yes, it is. And his remark, which everybody heard, which was outrageous, said that, look, Iraq, then we asked him about Iraq. He said, I tell you what I do. I go up to him, I say, look, you see that desert out there? Let me go. If you don't listen to me, this was going to happen. And we set up a nuclear weapon in the desert.
Yeah, so Iraq. Fire
he said,
Iran.
Iran. He said, we're going to fire, drop it. They dropped it. He says, now, if you don't drop this nuclear request, we're going to level Tehran. Next one.
Mm-hmm.
It's ready. It's warmed up in the bullpen.
So we're gonna.
He says right away, they'll give in. He says we'll send it out there to the desert. The first one, that's gonna kill a couple of rattlesnakes, a couple of scorpions, whatnot. Well, they did an overview of Iraq with Iran, of the footage and density. There are no deserts that people don't live that wouldn't be killed by a nuclear weapon going off. There are none.
Again, it's like,
and why would you do that?
Exactly. Everything about it is just horrific. It's not just that it, would destroy one locality. You've got fallout. You've got, it would poison the area for a thousand years. And on top of that, you start a nuclear war. What would it do to world power structures? What would China do, Russia do? We just start nuking countries. And this is what he said. This is the proper way to negotiate.
Right.
Negotiate. You just nuked a country. And then you threatened to eliminate their capital and all of their people.
Right.
That's negotiation.
Don't we?
That's the way the extremists think. That's
of course.
To do to America. Let's shut down America.
Right.
Like Obamacare.
Right.
Let's throw a nuke off the side of the White House until he comes out with his hands.
That's right. That's right. Let's nuke Washington because we can set it up the Capitol in Mississippi or Louisiana.
Yeah.
Someplace Texas.
You know, hey,
we can set up in Texas.
They had the headquarters of a Confederacy down there.
That's right. He said, listen, you see that desert out there? I want to show you something. You pick up your cell phone and you call somewhere in Nebraska and you say, okay, let it go. And
that.
So there's an atomic weapon. Goes off, blasts missiles, middle of the desert, and it doesn't hurt anybody. Maybe a couple of rattlesnakes, scorpions, whatever. Then you say, see? The next one would be in the middle of Tehran. So when we mean business, we want to wipe you out. Go ahead. Take a few tough positions and continue with your nuclear development. You want to be peaceful? Just reverse it all, and we'll still guarantee you that you have a nuclear power plant for your electricity. I mean...
Now see, to begin with, besides the... tyranny and the overt bullying and everything else. That doesn't even make sense because what they say is they're building power plants for electricity. And what he says is we're going to nuke you unless you build a nuclear power plant for electricity. What? What? That doesn't even make sense.
No, well, he only knows his aces and deuces.
He's nuts.
And he said, oh, by the way, Allison, he gave more than $100 million to super PACs.
$100 million.
Right. Of his own money to super PACs. But that's nothing. He makes that in a day in China. He makes that a day.
I'm going to bring up history again. I apologize. But let me state something.
I don't want to know about a damn history. We don't need no stinking history here.
This is part of the hypocrisy of the Republicans that drives me nuts. So here's a guy who, you know, he's complaining about foreign influence on America. I mean, everything about this is just is cracking me up. So this is a guy who complains about, you know, Obama and everything else coming here, taking over our government and being under the thumb of, you know, foreign people everywhere. This guy's spent $100 million to buy elections, just personally, just him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that is a single person, like the evil overlord, buying an election in America. But so then he wants to nuke Iran to show them a lesson,
right.
Boss, because they're the evil, evil, evil Islamic people that are the just the poster child of
poster
what they hate.
Right.
The person they want to put on Mount Rushmore, Papa Reagan, Grandpa Reagan, you know, the man they want to put right there, you know, blast off, you know, FDR or somebody and put him there. He was literally going to be impeached and put in prison until they, A, played the Alzheimer's card, and then sent several of his main people. He had more people in his administration go to jail than anyone in history. And most notably, Oliver North claimed full ownership of everything, went to prison for it, to protect his commander-in-chief.
Oliver North just come out later and said, oh, no, the president knew all about this.
No, everybody knows that. It's been documented, in fact, everything else. But he got away with it. They let it go because they didn't want to bring the whole country down again.
Right.
Because we'd just gone through Nixon years.
Right.
But this is a guy who was complete violation of the Constitution, caught red-handed, selling weapons to Iran so that they could run drugs and do things illegal.
He's selling weapons to the Congress.
In Central America. But he's laundering them all through Iran. That's what they were caught doing, right? These are the same people who now said we should go and nuke Iran. Now, the hypocrisy.
Well, you got to remember the king was there when he was all guy.
Unbelievable. No.
Oh, that was after the king, right. That's right. That's after the king.
Ayatollah.
Right, just Ayatollah, right.
Dragging our corpses through the
streets. Right, he was selling them, right.
And he went in And then they sent Dick Cheney and them over there doing business with these boys. Got caught doing it.
Yep.
Now, where's the outcry? Where, you know, you're going to nuke these people and call
them. But that's your history.
I know.
American history. That's not American history. That's only Marxist, social.
Okay. Well, look, they want to investigate and impeach
Canadian Obama history
for not responding fast enough in Benghazi. Right?
Yes.
Imagine if
we should have nuked Benghazi at that.
Imagine if Iran blew an entire building or base full of American Marines out into the Persian Gulf. Just blew it into
action. Well, Obama getting peaked.
Okay, no. Imagine they did this on his watch.
But he's
and then took over our embassy, burned it down, killed all the people, dragged their corpses through the thing, and then held all the workers hostage for years during his term. And then imagine if Obama went in illegally, secretly, and gave them drugs and weapons for money, and also that he could start an illegal war in Central America and brought down the government, killed all the priests and everybody that protested against it at the time, did all this horrible stuff, and then got caught working with the Iranians who had just blown our Marines out to the bay and killed our embassy people and drug our ambassadors through the streets and held our citizens hostage for years. Do you think he would be in office? Do you think he would
be
under investigation?
It wouldn't be. Forget about the hostage. The first time we have a blown up Marines that were killed, he would be impeached.
Yeah, but all of that factually happened.
Yeah, but that's.
And they just want to put him on Mount Rushmore and clap their hands.
That's your history. That's not true. That's your history. See, you're lying. You lie.
The hypocrisy is appalling. It's unbelievable what they come up with.
Well, let's just listen to it. Here's another strategy. The Daily Show. I mean, everybody knows The Daily Show don't have real reporters. But these people are so stupid, they think The Daily Show is actually a real show. Let's listen to this.
So how come the homosexuals aren't defending us Christians with our right to be able to express ourselves?
At what point has your right to express yourself been infringed upon?
I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm concerned about it. I have a radio show. I'm just concerned about any oppression that may come.
Sure.
That people might say, Matt, you can't say that on the radio, that homosexuality is a sin.
But you can't even go on the radio anymore and condemn a whole subset of people to hell without getting some blowback.
Well, when you put it that way, it does sound rather arrogant and myopic, narrow-minded and bigoted.
Good. Then I've done my job.
Well, and here's one more thing. Now, this is this woman, this Republican strategist, Nicole Nikipor. Nicole, yeah, I think that's how you pronounce her name, Nikipor. Mm-hmm. And she's being interviewed by a Daily Show. I can't think of his name right now. The last one was news reporter Samantha from The Daily Show. And here's another one of the reporters interviewing this Republican strategist, Nicole Nikipor. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Anyway.
Let's solve this right here, right now.
Let's do it.
We just want our government back open. So what do?
Defund Obamacare. The GOP is trying to save the American people from a disastrous health care plan. We don't have joy in the shutdown.
Can you just give us back our government? And when you do, include Obamacare. Because it's the law.
It is law. But it's not good law. It's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional.
Even though the Supreme Court deemed it constitutional.
The Supreme Court deemed it constitutional, but it had to go to the Supreme Court to do so. And they still don't know what's in the bill.
The Supreme Court didn't read the bill. I feel the same way. Can we just stop this whole interview, please? You know, it's just a vicious circle. You dig your heels in, you say something stupid.
It's a stupid law.
And I give a generically witty response like, yes, affordable health care for millions of unemployed people is stupid. Then these dummies laugh.
But where does it end?
It ends with defunding Obamacare.
Good done. I get this job.
Now here's the Republican strategist. He said to her, Obamacare is the law, yeah, but it's a stupid law. He said, but it was passed by the Supreme Court.
He said it was passed by Congress.
It was passed by Congress.
Yeah, but it's unconstitutional.
But it's unconstitutional. He said, but it was passed by the Supreme Court.
And
she said,
yeah, well, it's constitutional,
yeah,
but it hasn't passed the state
but
court.
It had to get to the Supreme Court from the state court. That's how it got there.
I mean, look, you can't.
And she said, when you see it, she looks at it when he said the Supreme Court passed it, she says, yeah, but it had to go through the state court to get to the Supreme Court.
But
what?
These people, it's like my dad always said, it doesn't care. You know, reality, facts, it doesn't, these are people, I mean, literally, who deny facts. They think that there's no, the world is 5,000 years old and floating around in the ark still. I don't know what they think, but it's insane. I have to remind you of something, though. How extreme. Look, the party, this is one thing that I love. Senator Olympia Snowe of Maine. She's a Republican.
Yes.
She came out and said, this is not a party I even recognize.
That's right.
Anymore. She said it's been taken over by extremists. And she said there are a few people remaining who are still moderates. It's just been taken over, and it's irresponsible, and they just don't know. She didn't even recognize them. And that's an incredible statement.
Of course.
And it's a wake-up call. These people need to wake up. But there was one other thing. I was going to say this about this earlier, and I forgot. But, like, this will show you an example. Earlier, we were talking about Ted Cruz and these extremists. You know, these people, you know, these are running around claiming, you know, everything they claim. So the father of Cruz is in this article here.
Again.
So Ted Cruz's father.
Who?
He says,
still can't talk English. Speak English, yeah.
This is a guy who says, he says that President Barack Obama is a Muslim.
Oh, yeah.
And he slams all other Republicans, he calls them rhinos, for betraying his son during the thing during the
vote. What, doing what? Oh, betraying his son.
Betraying his son, right. He said that they didn't successfully back his son's effort to defund Obamacare. And this Cuban immigrant is a pastor, by the way, just put that in there.
Evangelical.
That he is a Muslim who will side with the Muslims as soon as the wind shifts. Okay. And as he's speaking, he said that the women in the audience screamed out, yeah, he's a Muslim, you know. And these are, I mean, this is one thing. Here's the statement they made. Cruz said, as a matter of fact, about Obamacare, one of the things in Obamacare I saw is that for the elderly, every 5 years, they have to go to end-of-life counseling. You know what this translates into? Suicide counseling.
Suicide counseling.
Now, again, he's a Muslim, and he's got the death, you know, squads going. He's going, and I love the new twist, suicide counseling. I mean, it's almost like suicide bombing.
Yeah,
like,
well,
society, but they're terrorists.
They're going to tie a jacket around you full of dynamite.
But this is the father and the pastor, Cruz, talking about his son. And just like this week, we heard the other guy who said he got in trouble. He got with the politician. He got in trouble calling Obama a Muslim, and said that he prayed to Allah, and he was always.
Oh, yeah. Right. Right.
Up,
yeah, I didn't even bother recording because I had so much of that here.
But these are the nuts. At this point, you got people like, look, Senator Snowe saying she can't even recognize her party. You've got these guys running against senators from Mississippi saying they're Marxists. The Republicans are Marxists. You know, these guys are nuts. It's scary. they're not even in the same they're not playing with the full deck that the rest of us play. Whoa. It's kind of scary.
Well, let me tell you how bad it's got. I mean, after all that, now we have Glenn Beck stepping up to the microphone with his crews.
With his sweater vest on.
Yes, and this is what is going on now.
Well,
Glenn Beck is now spreading another rumor about Obama.
You wonder why out of nowhere the Washington Redskins have been targeted so brutally over their team name. Gee, do they give 97% of their money to Republicans?
You're kidding.
What a surprise that is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Out of nowhere, it's all of a sudden a big issue from the President of the United States. 97% of my Redskins' money goes to Republicans.
Follow the money.
Mm-hmm. I will bet you that is to send a message.
They now say, you remember, so the other day when it came out that the Washington Redskins need to change their name to the Washington, they can't, the Washington Indians. Well, see, someone else has the Indians. So they want to do that. They can say the Washington Chiefs. They can't say Chiefs because someone else got the Chiefs. So the Redskins is out derogatory. And they asked the president, he didn't come out and say, oh, let me tell you about this. Mm-hmm. He was asked in a part of his new conference, what do you think about the debacle with the name of Redskins? He said, well, all he said was, I think that maybe it might be a good idea if they would change that.
Right.
So now they're saying the only reason why he said that is because that the head of the owner of the Washington Redskins, Daniel, whatever his name is, gave 98% of his funding,
his
donations to the Republican Party. But then they didn't talk about the rest, so he said that's the reason why he said it. Oh, so does that mean that Obama is going to go after the San Diego Chargers, who gave 90% of their money to the Republican Party? And there was one other, the football office gave 90% of their money to the Republican Party.
Maybe,
does that mean he's going to go after them?
Maybe they'll stop ordering Papa John's pizza, too.
Well, I would. I told everybody. Matter of fact, I told, who was it? It was somebody down in, I think it was somebody in, it was the driver, our driver that we met, very nice young lady, and I don't have her card with me, so that means I'm going to have to get her card and read it next month on the phone. She was very nice. She gave us, she worked at the Atlanta Airport. She was operating the shuttle bus,
mm-hmm.
and I asked her to call in. She didn't call in today. But anyway, we were waiting for other people, and there was no other people. But we had a nice little talk, my wife and I and her, and she was telling us about that she loved chicken fillet or fillet of chicken. What was the name of it? Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I said, I don't go there because they are racist and they are part of the daggone major problem in this country of another chain that's devoting all their money to evangelical and not anything wrong with evangelical, but when you go over the deep end about it, it's a major problem with me.
Here's the thing. They don't want any repercussion publicly.
That's right.
But they spent all their money
to
create public laws that ban gays and ban other things like that. So
and against health care, Obamacare, everything else, so forget it.
They're engaging in public
policy. But they don't want people to know.
They
don't want to be called on. You can't have both ways.
If you want to do that, fine. But don't sit there and hide.
You know, it's just ludicrous, you know.
Hide behind your nuggets.
Hide behind your chicken and nuggets. And my grandson, the youngest one, just came in. Say hello, Blake. Hello, stranger.
I love it.
Okay, good. Did you get a green face today? You got a happy face? When I look at that, I better see that.
See? Even children.
You got one more week that you have to get a happy face.
All right.
Come here, and then tell everybody what you're going to get if you get another week of green smiley faces.
Hamilton,
Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Going to get a Hamilton. Not a Lincoln, but a Hamilton.
For the
no reason why I said it, because I didn't think he could do it, but he's doing it.
For all the forces yes. that are listening.
All the Marxists that are listening.
Or let me rephrase that, the Democrats that are listening.
Yes.
Don't understand economic policies of that alien system, capitalism. What would the Hamilton be?
Hamilton. Did you know what a Hamilton is, Blake? What is it? Come here. Speak in the microphone. What is a Hamilton? What is a Hamilton? What is a Lincoln? How much is it?
A Hamilton is 10. And Damn. Washington is...
George Washington. A Lincoln. What's a Lincoln?
Okay, I got this one.
Is how much? Yes, say it.
Five?
Okay, five.
Okay, so what's the Hamilton?
He said it was 10, right?
Did he say it?
That's what he said.
Okay, that's it.
So he's going to get a tenner.
Going to get a tenner, huh?
Ah, well, that's very good, sir. I applaud your green faces.
And how old are you? Say it. Come over here. Speak into the mic. Speak into the mic. Come over here. Say hello, you are. Come on closer. Come on closer. Say hello, you are.
Hello, I'm Sylvia.
No, how old are you?
Oh, very nice.
How old are you?
I'm five, and my cousin William Arthur Crossman, and he is seven.
And what school? Right. Come here. What school do you go to?
Lady.
Speak into the microphone.
A Lady of Assumption.
Our Lady of Assumption.
Okay.
Very nice.
Okay, goodbye.
Very good, very good.
So, yes, yeah, so we're coming to so since I got some time, I want to tell you about this Mexican vacation. Since we're finished with all for the first time, we've gotten through everything. And, we got some late news coming in.
Your scandal.
We got some late news coming in. Just make it a scandal rag. Make it about 5 minutes there.
I'll handle this part since I'm from here and I know the guy. You handle this part. So before we get to the pure Catholic scandals,
yes.
Here's an interesting little news item that came up. It's kind of sad,
yes.
But it puts a spotlight on. We were talking about Redskins and stuff earlier. So talking about NFL and talking about someone that I happen to know. So there's a player that I actually went to school with down at the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg, mm-hmm. Mississippi.
Oh.
He was our quarterback. Went on to glory in many different teams in the NFL. Including,
well, not that many.
He was in Atlanta. He was Green Bay.
No, not Atlanta.
Yeah, he was.
Green Bay.
Excuse me. You can look it up. I know where he was.
Must have been there 5 minutes.
And then he was.
I don't remember him back then.
Okay. Been, all these things, but his name is Brett Favre.
Yes.
And he actually came out recently and said that he is suffering from memory loss.
Yeah.
Now that he's forgotten some of the things, like his daughter playing soccer, for instance, he can't remember any games or seeing her ever play, things like that. And they said that was kind of shocking to me, but it's not shocking. It's common mm-hmm. with NFL players because of the head injuries. And there's been a lot in the news recently about concussions and all that. So I would urge people, you know, if you have any interest in that, look it up. He's just being honest. You know, he's just a good guy. He's still young, but this is one of the reasons why I think he should stay retired and not try to come back. Because, you know, he's come back several times.
Oh, yeah, he's not coming back.
I know he's a competitor. He loves to play. He's grown up playing. He's been playing since he was a little kid. But he doesn't need to come back. He's got money. He's got fame. He's got glory. He's got the rings. Just stay home so that you can remember staying home and enjoy your time that you've got. Because this is a real problem. And I hope that the NFL does something. I hope they invest some time and money into some equipment and make concussions a thing in the past. But,
I don't know how they're going to do that.
Well, look, we got enough technology.
You get hit, it don't matter what you have on.
Now they can have a gel pack in a helmet or something. I hope
that helmet is so gel packed now.
I know, but I'm hoping there's something they can come up with. But they need to invest the money in it so that we don't have a whole generation of severely mentally handicapped players.
It's really sad. It really is.
Yeah. And you hate to see this because, I mean, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He's one of the best records ever. And pretty soon we might be, reminding him that he even played. So that's not a good
thing. Yeah, well, that's another thing. No, that's
not
a success story.
No, that's not a success story. Catholic scandal rag here that you have?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's really not a scandal rag. I mean,
I love this Pope, by the way. I have to tell
you. Oh, yeah.
I'm not Catholic. You are.
He's done.
This Pope is phenomenal. Pope Francis has really invigorated the church, and he has really caught the attention of the world, and he's doing some house cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about houses that he's cleaning, holy mackerel. What's
cleaning some
guy?
Houses, yeah,
so,
boy.
There's a guy in Germany named Bishop Franz Peter Turbatz von Elst.
Ooh.
How about that?
You think that he has got some Nazi in him? Mm. I don't know.
Oh, but listen to this. This guy, who is a bishop in the church, the head of a diocese, somehow, I'm not quite sure. I need to go into this profession, apparently. But somehow, as a priest, he has a...
Priest, or is he a cardinal?
Well, no, he's a bishop now.
Bishop.
Somehow, during his, priestly rise to now, he's got a $43 million home.
Well, where did you think all those Van Goghs and things went? I said the Nazis were getting something out of this.
With those coins in that little dish, I thought, it was doing something.
No, that's in here, but it was going over there. They already got it. Mm. Please.
So, anyway, our Pope, who actually is a pretty cool guy, I'm hoping he stays that way and keeps exciting me.
Yeah, without getting knocked off
because
he won't ride in the Pope mobile anymore.
I know, but... Anyway, he, as this article says, boots the bishop. He has kicked him out of the diocese.
Gestapo boots the bishop.
Permanently removed until investigation is finished, but he is removed for the time. He's been expelled from the diocese, can't even enter the diocese, which that's pretty traumatic. But so he's been,
so he can't even go to his $43 million house, huh?
Home. Yeah. Thanks, but while the Pope's in there cleaning it up, probably with a broom, this guy had to leave.
He might be with a
broom. Under investigation, but can you imagine that? I mean, this is the problem.
Well,
this is what erodes confidence and stuff in the church. People think that you're a lying scumbag when you sit in a $43 million mansion and tell people to, honor
people. Well, this is Pope Francis doesn't even live in the palace.
Exactly.
He lives in one of the cottages in the Stolzenwagen, but it's a three-room cottage, I believe. He doesn't drive in the Pope Mobile. He takes a small car. They had to hire, I think it was 20 or 30 more armed security because he's a target now. Every week he goes to some other, he is the vicar of the Vatican. That means the vicar of Rome, I should say. So that means it's all Rome, not just the Vatican. He goes he stops at someone's house unannounced on the weekend and says, "What you got to eat?" And he eats whatever they're eating.
Yeah. Well, here's,
if you don't have it, they don't have it, he goes out and gets it and brings it back.
Yeah.
Goes out and gets it. Goes out and gets it. Not send somebody. He goes out and gets it and brings it back.
Because he's a cool Pope.
I mean, just,
And that's one thing that I'm glad about.
I want him to speak to Rick Santorum. That's what I want him to do.
These kinds of scandals, though, used to occur fairly frequently, and then nothing would happen. Get swept under the rug. And I'm glad this Pope is literally cleaning house.
Well, you know, he said about the nativity scene. $250,000 a year to put up the nativity scene. Why?
Yeah.
They're not redoing the nativity scene. They're only unpacking it from storage. So why does it cost $250,000?
Right.
Who's getting this money here?
Right.
Yeah,
and that's part of the thing, you would hope that the church is doing good deeds,
mm-hmm.
and not just like, taking the money and investing it in a $43 million home or something. So anyway, that was just a news item But it shows that this Pope is actually, for the first time ever, cleaning house and being transparent about things.
Oh, yeah.
He said that one of the things that made people mad about this was not just the fact that it happened, but that the guy, when it was called out and everything else, he refused that all of this is opaque. They won't release any of the economics of what he paid and what all this kind of stuff because he says it's all his prerogative, his church. So he's hiding behind that, you know. And this Pope says, no, you don't, you know, it's... And it should be the people's money.
Where are all the Van Goghs that were missing from the daggone the place in France, the Moulin Rouge, not the Moulin Rouge. some of them are missing too. The Louvre.
Yes. They took them all and then hid them in caverns and then dispersed them.
Absolutely. And Klaus Van Cliburn there. I mean, he was part of the Ruhr Rover conspiracy.
Carl, our favorite Texan.
Yes.
Well, here's the thing, though. That did happen, and we'll get into that one day if you want to about the whole history of it. And the art war afterwards is really fascinating because, you know, the communists came in afterwards and they took over their
Obama?
Court. Yeah, those guys. And they actually liberated a lot of that artwork, and now it's back in Russia, you know, because they cleaned up.
Well, that means Obama must have some of it.
Eastern part of Germany.
He must have some of it.
Well, maybe he is a commie because apparently the Lincoln Party of the Marxists.
That's
right.
Right. So he's got to be a commie.
Now, here's something before we get to your good news.
Have we got another minute?
Another one. This is the racist scandal.
Oh, yes.
So apparently it's just not enough to be a racist in the South of America. You have to be in South America. Apparently now, okay, so this is Caribbean news for all of you people. Some Haitian news.
So Cruz was down there too,
right? Dominican Republic. Okay, for those of you who don't know, it's a little country down there. It's a republic in the Caribbean. Look it up. It's on an island. It's neat. It's there. You can go and travel. Have fun. And, or, if you're a refugee, run away. Stay away.
Mm-hmm.
Flee now. Because government officials in the Dominican Republic have decided to change the law after a long time. They now seize birth certificates of people who are born in Haiti but were immigrants. They came over when the disaster in Haiti occurred.
Oh.
They were brought over, but they've been living there for decades, and all their children were originally granted citizenship.
Right.
Just like here. You come to this country and your children are born here, they're citizens of America because guess what? They live here and they grow up here, right?
Mm.
Okay. So that was always the law. But now a lady sued because Juliana Pierre, 23-year-old, she had her birth certificate taken from her forcibly by government officials and was told that she was not a citizen. She had to get out because her parents had been immigrants from Haiti. So she was like, well, anyway, she sued, and then they said, in the most stunning decision, human rights advocates worldwide are horrified, the Dominican Republic's Constitutional Court just overturned her case and said, nope, that's perfectly fine, and they annulled her citizenship and all the children of all immigrants ever.
So Ted Cruz is down there?
So now hundreds of thousands of citizens just got their citizenship revoked. And
they got to get out of town.
Not only that, but if you're an immigrant up to four generations ago.
Four generations?
Talk about a purge. Hey, you know what? I've got one for you.
Please. But just can't get out because you know they'll be doing that here in the United States very shortly.
So this judge ordered a government review of all birth certificates since 1929. So anybody living, they're going to go through and they're going to decide. Anybody has any foreign blood? You lost your citizenship.
Yeah, right.
Let me bring up.
We got 1 minute, and we need to get out of here.
Okay. Well, let me just say that.
Yes.
Me and the historian. I don't want to be butt obvious, but if they look back just a little bit further, they'll find these things called American Indians, Native Americans, that were there before them.
Yes.
Okay. And they might just find that none of them are citizens. You can't pick and choose your immigrant status.
Okay, you heard that, America. This has been the last word. And that has been the last word. We're going out with escape for the Planet of the Apes. We got to get out of here.